Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Barack Obama's team did talk to Governor Rod Blagojevich and his staff about the vacant Senate seat, but they say they had no idea he was allegedly trying to sell it.
My inquiry determined that there was nothing at all inappropriate about those conversations.
Greg Craig and the Obama Transition Office prepared the report.
Rahm's conversations, those are all predictable and appropriate conversations about individuals that might be considered by the governor.
We also now know Mr. Obama, his chief of staff Rahm Emanuel, and Obama confidant Valerie Jarrett had been questioned by the U.S. Attorney's Office in the case.
The question is this going to be enough to satisfy the kind of permanent low-grade fever cynicism that Americans have when they think about politicians, especially when one of them has been arrested?
CBS News chief political correspondent Jeff Greenfield. It is an awful sound at the GM truck plant in Janesville, Wisconsin, the sound of wind and sad voices.
I tried to stay away from the people that were crying. I didn't want any part of that. I'm getting a lot of these thinking of you text messages from all my friends because everybody knows what's going on.
Production has stopped there and in Moraine, Ohio, as GM's cutbacks start to take hold. Real estate is like a very ill patient, not even thinking about getting up off the sick bed yet.
We got another grim month of data in November. Both new and existing home sales fell on the month. We still see for sale inventory readings in terms of supply at or near all-time highs.
Mike Larson at Weiss Research, the value of homes today is at least 11% lower than it was at Christmas time last year. Wall Street, the Dow lost 100 points today. The Nasdaq was off nearly 11. Oil at $39 a barrel. A sign of the tough times, this kind of crime. Police say shoplifting is up 10 to 20% this year. Barbara Stabe at the National Association for Shoplifting Prevention.
We have a kind of a perfect storm of shoplifting going on right now. There's the faltering economy, there's this growing phenomenon of organized retail crime, and there's a culture of that's more permissive of greed in our society.
More and more frequently, the items stolen are living basics, like food. Beware that cute snowman snow globe. If you leave it in the window, the sun might stream through it and get hot.
The snow globe could act as a magnifying glass in sunlight. It's a really big snow globe, and so I think the size of it is part of the issue.
Linda Odell says Hallmark is recalling 7,000 of those snow globes, saying two fires have been started so far. Need a good reason to sleep in? One extra hour? Researchers at the University of Chicago Medical Center say getting just one extra hour of sleep a day will lower the risk of calcium deposits in your arteries, in short, reducing your risk of arteriosclerosis and heart attack. The study tracked actual sleep cycles and the rate of calcium buildup, even accounting for age, race, gender, and everything else. More sleep meant healthier arteries. This is CBS News.
Maybe it's just me being a coach and all, but I thought winning was supposed to be hard. So Staples is doing this gifted for free thing where 10,000 people are going to win their entire purchase. GPSs, digital cameras. You know what? You're awesome at listening to the radio. You deserve a trophy or something, too. I mean, everyone else is winning these days. 10,000 winners, everything in the cards. Where's the challenge, Staples? Go to giftedforfree.com if you absolutely must. No purchase necessary. Go to giftedforfree.com for official rules. Must be 18 or older. Ends 12/24/08. I win.
Life is made up of little moments. I don't want to miss any of them.
Jump rope with me, Grandma?
Yes, Advil. It's the answer I found to keep pain from standing in my way. Yes, Advil. I used to take different pain relievers for joint pain, backaches, muscle pain. Now Advil is my every pain reliever, no matter where I hurt. Nothing works better. Nothing works on more pain.
Double Dutch?
Yes, Advil. my every pain reliever.
Among OTC pain relievers, use as directed.
That sure wasn't tea in the harbor. Not unless you're thinking Texas.
ExxonMobil agreed to pay more than $6 million in connection with a diesel oil leak into Boston Harbor in 2006. The U.S. Attorney's Office announced the plea agreement, saying the leak of approximately 15,000 gallons of diesel fuel happened because of a defective valve that the company a few months earlier had been warned about. Stacey Mitchell is chief of the Environmental Crime Section for the U.S. Department of Justice.
This spill should not have happened. ExxonMobil was aware of the problem and disregarded warning signs that repairs were needed.
Besides the fine, Exxon also agreed to a court-appointed monitor at their terminal. Carl Stevens for CBS News, Boston.
Would have been one heck of an arrival, but an expensive way to go. Police in South Salt Lake, Utah, say a man was arrested trying to drive away in a city fire truck. He got the air horn blaring, but he couldn't seem to get the truck going. 25-year-old suspect said he planned to drive all the way to Washington State to see his mom for Christmas. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Honey, come on, we've got last-minute shopping to do.
Let's go to
Lowe's last-minute extravaganza!
A bullhorn?
Sorry, but this Thursday through Christmas Eve, we'll get 10% off major appliances, $397 or more.
Oh.
Plus, we can register for a free $10 online certificate with purchase of $100 in Lowe's gift cards and get 10% off all wet dry vacs and Kobalt tool storage chests.
Let's go to Lowe's.
I'll start the car!
Do your last-minute shopping at Lowe's this weekend to get 50% off holiday decorations. Lowe's, let's build something together. While supplies last, some restrictions apply. See store for details.
Experience the joy of designing your own ring at Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry.
That's Jared!
Let the experts at Jared show you how easy it is to create an engagement ring that reflects your own personal style. Choose from their popular settings in platinum or hundreds of settings in gold. Then select the perfect diamond from thousands at Jared in a wide variety of shapes and sizes to create a ring that's yours and yours alone.
It can only be Jared!
Find a Jared store or shop anytime at Jared.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show from San Francisco, up and down the left coast, all the way to the Canadian border, and now live in Boston on AM 1510. Great to have you listening. Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. It's also going to be rebroadcast on Sunday, January 4th on our San Francisco affiliate, Green 960. Joining me is San Francisco Chronicle writer Jonathan Curiel. He's got a powerful new and very interesting book out. It's called Al, with a little mark, America, as you would find some, certain names in Arabic. And it's subtitled, Travels Through America's Arab and Islamic Roots. Jonathan, welcome to our program today.
Thank you for having me.
I've been reading your work for many years, and when I see your byline, I always say, well, I better read this. You're a thoughtful writer. And this isn't blowing smoke. I think of you in the category of Johnny Apple, who used to write for the New York Times until he passed away. Maybe you don't abuse your expense account as much as he did, but you often write think pieces and analytical looks at big stories or movements or people, and I just want to acknowledge your work because I've found you quite excellent over the years.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. This book is an extension of that thoughtfulness, I hope, and, yeah. And we'll see.
Well, I really enjoyed it, and we're going to focus on a couple of aspects of the book. It's rich in taking a look at the connections between the Arab world and American culture, places, history. Let's start at the Alamo. What the hell did Arabs have to do with the Alamo, Jonathan?
Well, that's a great question. Arab workers did not work on the Alamo, but Arabic culture is embedded into the Alamo, and it's embedded there because of Spain. And this is the crucial connection for a lot of the connections I write about in my book. Spain is where, of course, Arabs and Muslims ruled over from 711 to 1492 until they were kicked out by Spaniards. And 1492, of course, was the same year that Christopher Columbus sailed to America.
Mm-hmm.
Now, despite this upheaval in Spain, despite what became known as the Reconquista, the elimination of not only Spain's Jews but its Muslims, Spain gravitated toward Muslim and Arab culture, actually embraced it, even at the same time that it was jettisoning its Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is one of the crucial contradictions that needs to be understood in my book. In the generations after getting rid of its Muslims, Islamic culture was still evident in Spain, and it was also evident in New Spain. New mm-hmm. Spain being the New World, the
Mexico.
Yeah, exactly, Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this Arabic and Islamic architecture that we find in the Alamo was deliberate. The Spanish government found Islamic architecture beautiful. You'll see it in a lot of Spanish buildings that survived the Reconquista,
mm-hmm.
Especially a building called the La Mezquita, the mosque in Spanish, which is in Cordoba. But in the Alamo, we have a Spanish mission. It's one of five Spanish missions in San Antonio. And when the Spanish government built these missions at the northern flank of its new Spain, it decided to embed Islamic architecture. And if you go to the Alamo, if you go to the front door of the Alamo, you'll find a geometric overhang over the door. Now, this geometric overhang has these beautiful arabesques. And it's very, very similar to the arabesques one finds in mosques, and even, for that matter, in Islamic calligraphy. This geometric overhang is called an alfiz, A-L-F-I-Z in Arabic. And this alfiz was been there from the moment the Alamo was built in 1724. Now, 1836 is the year that a lot of Americans know the Alamo, because that's the year that it was a military garrison, and that's the year that famously Davy Crockett and other Americans held off or tried to at least the government of Santa Anna. Since that time, if you go to the Alamo, as I did, they play up this military aspect, this military history of the building,
mm-hmm.
but the richer history, as far as I'm concerned, is the Islamic architecture, and that's because of Spain.
Yeah, it's a pleasant surprise because, as I explained to you before we went on the air, I have connections to Arab Americans in Detroit, and that was where I expected you to start. When I opened the book, I said, well, of course, because that's the biggest Arab population in the United States, and there's been news there since 9/11. And you do get to Dearborn, Michigan and the Detroit area later in the book, but it was an eye-opener to me because I never really thought of Texas as a place with any Arab influence, except maybe some oil patch influence. After all, George W. Bush got bailed out in his early oil patch days by his daddy's Arab friends.
No, that's right. And I'm glad you're mentioning this because most of the material in my book I didn't know about before I wrote the book. I had an interest in the subject. I had written about it before.
Mm-hmm.
I'd written about Islamic architecture, Arabic music, and Muslim literature. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know the full extent that Arab and Muslim culture had influenced America. And as you say, I go back 500 years. I go back with Columbus himself. This is also one of the shocking things, as far as I'm concerned, is that Columbus himself benefited from Arab and Muslim culture. Now, how did he benefit from that? Well, let's just look at linguistically. Columbus's title was Almirante de Mar Oceano, which means Admiral of the Ocean Sea. This is a title given to him by Queen Isabella herself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Admiral, this is from the Arabic Al-Amir, which means the commander. So here we have Columbus's very title deriving from Arabic. But then that might be, you could argue, a bit of trivia, but here's more than trivia.
Mm-hmm.
The caravels, you know, these ships, the Nina and the Pinta, which enabled Columbus to make his way to America.
Mm-hmm.
These triangular sailed ships were perfected by Arab sailors, Arab navigators,
mm-hmm.
and Columbus himself in his journals credits Arabs and Muslims for helping him get to America. This is something I'd not seen in any history book, any popular book of any kind. And as I was reading Columbus's journals and seeing his Arabic influence Spanish and seeing seen these quotations where he says, and in fact, I've met a lot of people in this life, Jews and Moors. They've all helped me. I was shocked by this, and I thought that this would give a context to the positive influence of Arab and Muslim culture on America for 500 years.
Jonathan Curiel is our guest here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines open if you'd like to talk with us here during our live broadcast at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372 is our toll-free number. His book, Al America, travels through America's Arab and Islamic roots. Now, Jonathan, you ever been to the Vatican?
Yes, I have.
And did you notice the Hall of Cartography? It's a place where they loop you through on your way to the Sistine Chapel. And it's fascinating because both in murals and in ceiling art, as you walk through there, you see the maps of the known world from the Vatican perspective over a series of centuries. And it starts off, you know, just with Italy, and then it expands to include the Mediterranean. And I find that fascinating, and to me, it's, I don't know, a little more compelling than the Sistine Chapel. The art isn't at the same level, but the rich history of that, and just seeing that perspective, that Rome was the center of the universe. And then, you know, as explorers moved around and as the traders plied the seas of the Mediterranean, they learned about other cultures, and that was, you know, included in the cartography, in the maps. What did you pick up in terms of the developments over time of Arab influences in the United States? Is it fairly recent with immigrants who came in, say, you know, from 1890 on, or is it relatively evenly distributed over our own rather short history?
No, that's a very good question you're asking. It starts, you know, oddly enough, as far as I'm concerned, with Columbus, with New Spain, and as I've pointed out to people in talks I've given, this was Arab and Muslim culture coming to America without Arabs and Muslims. Spain prohibited Muslims from going to the New World. They did not want Muslims there. They had kicked them out of their country. If you were a Muslim or even a so-called crypto-Muslim going to New Spain, to what became America, you were subject to death. You were subject to death. They did not want you, and then in a contradictory way, though, they wanted their culture. Now, so we have this, we have Islamic culture, Arab culture influencing America from the start. We have Islamic culture influencing the slave trade, starting in 1619 in this country and ending in 1865, theoretically. Now, upwards of 20% of the slaves brought to this country were Muslim slaves from West Africa.
And I didn't know that till I read your book.
That's right, and this what's interesting about this is that it gets into these other geographical connections. Now, Arab and Muslim influence had been had happened in West Africa for 800 years, more than 800 years, before the start of the slave trade. So when you have these Muslim slaves being brought to the United States of America, they had already been influenced, especially musically, but linguistically, and in other important ways. Now, when they get to this country, they still continue their traditions, albeit they're under duress and threat to convert to Christianity. Theoretically, most of them did, but they still retained their Muslim traditions, and, mm-hmm. and that in turn led to blues music, which we can talk about later on in the show if you'd like.
I'm not actually easing you into a break right now. I brought this music up because this is a song by Hugh Masekela, and it is a South African traditional song about a coal train. Stimela is the local term. And it reminds me of, you know, some of the roots of American blues with the very strong black slave influence. And it's a work song.
I love the song.
Yeah, you know it?
Yes, I do.
Stimela, Chitamba, Angamala, Sivele, Dala, Kupanye, Sa.
A little bit later this hour, we're going to talk about something Jonathan discovered in the research for his book, Arabic influence on the music of the Doors. Yeah, the rock band from the 60s. We'll talk about that as we continue. My guest, Jonathan Curiel. His book, Al America, travels through America's Arab and Islamic roots. It's out in hardcover. And we'll continue in just a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Oh.
You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
House and protect your investment.
Custom painting.
Call Don Dickman Painting for a free estimate.
Don Dickman Painting, serving Monterey Peninsula and the Big Sur Coast. Quality paint jobs and green painting solutions are fast and affordable. Call 667-2144. For a free estimate, call 667-2144. That's 667-2144. I'm Don Dickman. When quality counts, let us protect your investment. You're in good hands.
With Don Dickman Painting.
We're at www.dondickmanpainting.com.
Cornucopia Landscaping in Santa Cruz is a complete design, installation, and maintenance company. Cornucopia Landscaping specializes in water-saving gardens which retain a lush appearance. You can have fruit trees, grapevines, fresh vegetables, and many beautiful ornamental plants while using very little water. In fact, an entire Cornucopia Landscaping garden sips only as much water in a season as a lawn of equal size gulps down in 1 week. Drip irrigation is the key to a water-saving garden. Are you looking for a beautiful flagstone pathway? Cornucopia Landscaping builds decks, patios, arbors, fences, retaining walls, planter boxes, and many other custom-built wooden structures. Serving Santa Cruz County since 1996. For more information or a consultation, call Davis at 831-335-1209. That's 335-1209. That number again is 335-1209.
Show. Hugh Masekela is still playing there for us and enjoying it during the break. My guest, Jonathan Curiel. He's a reporter and writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. He's published a new book called All America, Travels Through America's Arab and Islamic Roots. And I got to ask the question, what are your own roots and what's your connection to the Arab world, Jonathan?
It's a circuitous connection. I'm Jewish. Mm-hmm. I was raised Jewish at Bar Mitzvah. I went to Israel when I was 16. And
you got the Phil Spector hair. It's a little different color, but
yeah, a little different, exactly. some people have said, "Oh, yeah, you're Jewish," without even knowing my name and so forth. But going to Israel in 1976 and being Jewish actually made me curious of the wider Middle East, mm-hmm. and that led to an intense interest in Egypt, for example. I really enjoy Egypt. I've been there three times. I've been to Iran. It's one of my favorite countries in the world. I've been there twice. I've reported from Iran.
Yes, you have.
And Lebanon, Syria, that whole part of the world interests me. And the thing about any part of the world, if you go there more, you want to go there even more and write about it even more. And so I've been interested in that part of the world for you know, more than two decades now.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is a kind of culmination of my thinking and also my dreams in a way, because look, I and a lot of other reporters have written about the Arab and Muslim world through the lens of terrorism. That's certainly one lens to write about the world, but as having lived in Pakistan, having traveled a lot in the Arab and Muslim world, I know that there's a lot more to the world than terrorism and even religion.
Mm-hmm.
And if you talk to Islamic scholars, they will say that the percentage of Muslims around the world who actually actively follow the precepts of Islam are about maybe 20% or so. So we have to understand the Arab and Muslim world more than through religion, more than through militarism and violence.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I'm concerned, this book is an attempt to drag out aspects of the world, but not just by themselves, to see how the Arab and Muslim world has connected to the United States of America. As far as I know, this is the first book that does that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a very interesting chapter about the influence on music, and we're going to get to the Doors specifically probably in the next segment. But I wanted to drag out something here that's an interesting artifact from the early 1960s, and I will hasten to add that it offends some people. This is Ray Stevens. And the music has Arabic influences, but I don't think it's a sincere replication of them.
Let me tell you about Ahab, the Arab, the sheik of the burning sands. He had emeralds and rubies just a dripping off of him and a ring on every finger of his hand. He wore a big old turban wrapped around his head and a scimitar by his side. And every evening about midnight, he'd jump on his camel named Clyde and ride silently through the night to the Sultan's tent, where he was secretly meet up with Fatima of the Seven Veils, the swingest number one dancer in the Sultan's whole harem. Cause like him and her had a thing going, you know, and they've been carrying on for some time now behind the Sultan's back. And you could hear him talk to his camel as he rode out across the dunes. His voice would cut through the still night desert air, and he'd say, oh, yo!
Now, this is a mockery of the call to prayer, isn't it?
It sounds like it to me, and I'm really glad you're airing this, because it's an example, you could say, of musical Orientalism.
Yeah.
There certainly is a lot of borrowing from the Arab and Muslim world, and it's done in a patronizing way, in you could say a cynical way. Now, you could argue how cynical and patronizing and Orientalist this is. It's clearly a little bit of all three.
Well, and Ray Stevens was a spoof guy. I mean, he did Guitar Zan. All his songs were, he was the Weird Al of his era.
Yeah, exactly. So in that sense, I dare to say, I don't know this for a fact, but I dare to say there are probably some Arabs and Muslims who would have fun with this song as well.
Mm-hmm.
But there is, as far as I'm concerned, a fine line between legitimately borrowing and respecting the traditions and then using and mocking them. And my book gets into some of that. And, of course, my book talks about Edward Said, the great Columbia University professor who wrote a book called Orientalism.
Mm-hmm.
In one way my book does this is the Shriners. I have a whole chapter on the Shriners. They wear the red fez.
Yeah.
They're known for their hospital care,
mm-hmm.
But they're also known for their Orientalist borrowings of Muslim and Arab culture. And I think they're a good example of an organization that initially, perhaps like Ray Stevens, but initially looked at the Arab and Muslim world for fun only for fun.
Mm-hmm.
They were drinking, they were cavorting, they were doing all these things that are antithetical to Arab and Muslim traditions. But and they were started in the 1880s. Now, right.
And they did have some sort of a sense of conscience because, you know, to offset their partying and womanizing, they raised massive amounts of money. We had the Shriners Burn Hospital here in San Francisco. I don't know where it is now, but it was out there near the sunset for many years.
And I'm glad you raised that point. Now, I the Shriners did change over the years. In fact, one of the reasons they changed, they let in Arab and Muslim members. I interviewed some of those members for my book. They say, and by the way, the Shriners used to call their centers mosques, and these buildings used to literally look like mosques. mosques. That was offensive to a lot of Muslims. Mm-hmm. But let me say this: I did interview.
They're trying to keep up with the Scottish rites.
Well, that's right. You could say that, and you could argue: is it innocent fun? But the Shriners let in Muslim members. Even Muslim members say they like the Shriners' identification with Arab and Muslim culture, and the Shriners' hospital care does parallel the Islamic tradition of zakat.
Mm-hmm. We'll pick up there as we continue. This is fascinating. We're talking about Arab and Islamic roots in America. The book is All America by Jonathan Curiel of the San Francisco Chronicle. Our lines are open for you at 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by New York Life Insurance Company. Built for economic times like these. To help protect your family's future, contact your New York Life agent and see why New York Life is the company you keep. I'm Charles Osgood. There was a very disturbing picture on the front page of the New York Times yesterday of children in Zimbabwe on their hands and knees on a roadway trying to find kernels of corn that might have dropped from a passing truck. There are chronic shortages of food, medicine, fuel, and cash there. Starvation, cholera, and rampant inflation have left Zimbabwe in a hopeless situation under President Robert Mugabe.
The situation simply can't continue.
U.S. State Department spokesman Sean McCormick.
The annual inflation rate in Zimbabwe is 231,000,000%. Just absolutely astounding.
And on top of that,
we have 1,100 deaths from cholera thus far, and the unemployment rate in Zimbabwe is 90%.
More after this.
All right, let's get down to some direct talk from DirecTV. At a time when the cost of almost everything around you is spiraling out of control, DirecTV puts you back in control with this amazing offer that locks in your price until 2010. Right now, you can get over 150 digital channels of DirecTV for just $29.99 a month for a full year. For a limited time, ask how to get 3 free months of HBO, Stars, and Showtime. That's 28 of the best premium movie channels free for 3 whole months. Lock in your savings until 2010 by switching to DirecTV today. Don't miss out. Call today. 888-578-DIRECTV. 888-578-DIRECTV. Call right now to get over 150 digital channels of DirecTV for just $29.99 a month for 12 months. 888-578-DIRECTV. Offer ends 12/31/08 and subject to credit approval. $23 bill credit requires rebate and enrollment in auto bill pay programs. New DirecTV customers only. Lease and credit card required. Other conditions apply. Call for details.
Over the weekend, the top U.S. diplomat in Africa, Shendai Fraser, said that Washington can no longer support a power-sharing proposal that would leave 84-year-old Robert Mugabe, who has run Zimbabwe since it gained independence in 1980, still in charge there. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown took the same position yesterday. And today Mugabe lashed out at President Bush and at Gordon Brown for what he called this stupid and foolish thinking. "We are not going to listen to them," he said. "We do realize that these are the last kicks of a dying horse." Mugabe refused to accept the results of a disputed election, but things have now gotten so bad there that the State Department spokesman McCormick says the United States is working with other countries, especially Zimbabwe's neighbors, to insist that Mugabe step down.
Any of Zimbabwe's neighbors who believe that the problems in Zimbabwe will remain in Zimbabwe and contain there are just fooling themselves.
The Osgood File. Transcripts, podcasts, and MP3s of these programs can be found at theosgoodfile.com. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Love.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio.
Apply liberally. Humble,
well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Jonathan Curiel is our guest. We're talking about Arab influences in America, even on rock music like The Doors.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher.
Now listen, coming up here in about 30 seconds, because they go to an instrumental break, and that's where I hear influences from Arabic music I've heard, and we'll see if this is what Jonathan has in mind. Now, this is Ray Manzarek at the keyboards.
Yeah, that's right. And it's, yeah, you're definitely hearing, as far as I'm concerned, Arabic musical influences here. And it's not just Arabic influence. It's a lot, it's the other influences. But, you know, you can hear the Arabic influences. And this is something that has drawn a lot of people to The Doors, maybe unconsciously, subconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I interviewed Ray Manzarek and I asked him specifically about Arabic musical influence on The Doors music, he said, yes, of course there is. And he said I was the first person to ask in 40 years about this connection. So it's something, even as I've given talks, people have suspected, but it's never really been put on paper and announced. Here's an example of Arabic musical influence on The Doors. And for that matter, other groups.
Yeah. Well, before we started the show today, I told you about an obscure piece, an independent solo release that Ray Manzarek did. It was 77 or 78. And it was a very powerful kind of rock opera. I mean, it was a theme album that was called The Golden Scarab. And it included a lot of spoken word references to the Nile River, to the whole era of the pyramids, and that part of the world and that part of history. And if you can ever find it in a used bin, either on vinyl, I don't know if it was transferred over to CD. It was not a big seller, but it was something that I knew about because we got free records at that time as a DJ. And I have always been impressed by that. And Ray Manzarek of The Doors is, I think, a very bright guy. If you read his poetry and his spoken word pieces, he goes beyond the let's get a groupie and get drunk kind of rock star thing.
Yeah, yes, he definitely does. And if you know the background of Ray Manzarek, and for that matter, the other members of The Doors, you know that they were interested in a lot of different musics. They always have been. And this is why, in some ways, the Doors music is a timeless music. It will last for generations and generations. And it is because they work in a lot of these different musical influences in a uncompromised way. I mean, you listen to this music, there's nothing that actually stands out and is jerky or seems out of place.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfectly added into the music, and that's why in some ways it's you hear Arabic music, but it's causes you to think, well, wait a minute, is that really Arabic music? It's so well synthesized into the music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to Ray Manzarek's credit, it's to Jim Morrison's credit, it's to all the Doors' credit.
Yeah. Do they have hummus in the recording studio?
You know, I didn't ask Ray Manzarek that. For all I know, there was hummus there.
Now, we're going to join this song in progress because When the Music's Over is almost 11 minutes long. But this is where they're getting ready to go to an instrumental break, just like in Light My Fire. And I hear some interesting influences here. that I wouldn't call it discordant or dissonant, but there are, you know, intentional flat notes in there that give you that kind of sensation.
Yeah, I mean, Ray Manzarek talks about the minor harmonic sense, the minor harmonic scale of Arabic music. That specifically is what he and the rest of the Doors were interested in. But it's interesting that you play this music. Later on in the song, lyrically, Jim Morrison shouts out, you know, Persian night babe, save us Jesus. Mm-hmm. Ray Manzarek says this is the Doors' way of integrating Islam and Christianity into the music. Now, it's not just Arabic music. It's actually Islam itself mm-hmm. that Ray Manzarek talked about to me. And this, I think, is an important connection to make here, because all the connections I read about in my book, you know, musical connections, architectural connections, poetry, and so forth.
Language.
Language, exactly. Mm-hmm. They're a way of drawing people into the bigger culture, and some people are drawn further in. I mean, Elvis Presley, for example, Ralph Waldo Emerson. You know, Ralph Waldo Emerson was in love with Persian poetry, but because of Persian poetry, he became much more interested in Islam and the Muslim world and the Quran, for that matter. So all these examples we talk about, music and others, are a way of drawing you in if you want to be drawn in.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan Curiel with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. His new book, All America, travels through America's Arab and Islamic roots. One more song, and this is quite obscure, from a Doors release after Jim Morrison died. It was called Full Circle. It's actually got one of my favorite songs on it called Ships with Sails. But the one with an Arabic influence is The Mosquito. And before we play a little bit of this, Jonathan, describe its popularity. It's not in the United States.
No, it's not in the United States. This album, Full Circle, and the song The Mosquito, this was worked after Jim Morrison's death. You know, a lot of people know the Doors because of Jim Morrison, rightfully so, and the rest of the band members. But after his death, the Doors still performed. They made this album, Full Circle. They created the song The Mosquito. And Ray Manzarek told me that when they're in Europe, when the new version of the Doors are in Europe, this song is one of the most popular songs, one of the most requested songs in Europe.
No me moleste mosquito, why don't you go? No me moleste mosquito, let me eat my burrito. No me moleste mosquito, why don't you go home?
I had forgotten about that break right there.
Right, yeah, it's a very interesting break. The song is interesting. My son, by the way, who's 7, loves this song.
Uh-huh.
I like the song a lot, too. Now, this is an example of a song, when you listen to it, you think, wait a minute, is there Arabic influence there? When I first listened to the song, and because of Ray Manzarek, he said, buy this album, Jonathan, and listen to The Mosquito. That's our most obvious Arab influence song.
Mm-hmm.
When I listened to the song, I thought, wait a minute, it doesn't hit me over the head the way some of the Doors' other songs do.
Yeah.
Like, for example, The End, the mm-hmm. intro to that song, to me, it's so obviously Arabic influenced, there's no question.
Yeah.
This one, to me, is less obvious,
mm-hmm.
But you could argue more interesting that way because it's not as noticeable as the other songs.
Yeah. Well, and this is an obscure sidebar, but there's a great song that Morrison did called Been Down So Long, so GD Long, so very damn long. And I always think of the Palestinians when I hear that one.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a lyrical reference. It's not a musical influence. Jonathan, when you put all this together, are Americans averse to acknowledging the influence of Arabs in our contemporary world?
I would say yes and no. I don't think they're really averse, but as far as my book is concerned, as far as the subjects I write about in my book, a lot of Americans don't know about these connections, and so they're not even averse to them because they don't know about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I write a lot about architecture, but music and language, and for example, a simple word like giraffe. Giraffe is from the Arabic zarafa, al zarafa. Alfalfa is from the word alfasfasa, from the Arabic alfasfasa. We could go on and on and on, and I do go on and on. And book, thank God. But
let's just mention one here that struck me, which is the origin of the prison island in the middle of San Francisco Bay.
This is a great connection here, Alcatraz. Now, of course, there are a lot of AL words in English derived from Arabic. This is an example of one of them. It derives from the Arabic Al-Ghattas, which is A-L-G-H-A-T-T-A-S. Now, this word came into English via Spain, and it came into Spain because of the Arab and Muslim rule over Spain. Now, the Spaniards adopted Al-Ghattas as Alcatraz, and Al-Ghattas means white-tailed sea eagle. Spain adopted the word and had it mean every bird that was a seabird in a way. Then it came to be known as every island that had these seabirds on it. So when the Spaniards came to San Francisco Bay and saw this little island, they said, aha, we'll call this island Alcatraz.
Wow. I thought it was the large deposits of guano.
Well,
that at least reminded them, well, the birds own this one.
No, that's right. That's right. Well, look, one doesn't know when you go to Alcatraz, there's nothing when you get there that says, welcome to an island that derives from the Arabic Al-Ghattas. And this is the pattern for everything I write about in my book.
The word alcohol entered Spanish from the Arabic word al-kuhul.
Alcohol, exactly. And when Spain was ruled over by Arabs and Muslims, this was the height of intellectual ascendancy, if I may put it that way, somewhat mm-hmm. awkwardly. Mm-hmm. While the rest of Europe was in the Dark Ages, Muslims and Arabs in Spain were reaching the heights of study with universities in terms of chemistry, in terms of language, in terms of navigational skills. It was really historical apex, not only for Arabs and Muslims, for the rest of the world. And in fact, a lot of non-Arabs and non-Muslims went to Spain during Arab and Muslim rule to glean this knowledge and take it back to the rest of Europe. This is a connection that a lot of academics know about and have written about. My book says, well, wait a minute, it didn't stop there. This knowledge, these connections were taken to New Spain, to the New World.
Mm-hmm. And Al is simply the article that's the equivalent of the in English?
No, that's right. The uh-huh. Al-Ghattas, right. Alcohol, mm-hmm. Alchemy, for example.
In Los Angeles, Al 405. I've always thought it's bizarre. In L.A., you don't refer to a freeway just by the number. It's the 10. It's the 405.
Well, yeah.
And it's crept northward, but it's an Angeleno anomaly, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I spent a little bit of time in Los Angeles, and that's an interesting point. There are these connections, though, linguistic connections that we do take for granted, and giraffe and alcohol and a lot of other examples. And even, for example, the number zero, this comes from the Arabic zifr. Now people think of numbers as being Arabic numbers, and of course they came from India, numbers are an example of how the Arabs and Muslims took these numbers, reworked them in a way with mathematical principles, added the concept of zero, and we can thank the Arabs and Muslims for zero, and literally, you know, as I said, zero comes from the Arabic zifr.
Mm-hmm. You also lead this chapter on language and names with a quiz where you ask people to check off the names of towns that have an Arabic origin. And I don't want to blow it for people, but this is radio. Aladdin, Wyoming, Arabia, Nebraska, Baghdad, California. Where's that?
Baghdad, okay. California, that's in the far reaches of southern California, a uh-huh. desert area. And that's okay. why they named it Baghdad, because they were looking for places around the world that were deserty.
I've been to a little Baghdad in Detroit.
Yeah.
There was
yeah.
a radio studio I had to go there, and boy, it looked like Baghdad after shock and awe.
That's funny.
We call it Cairo, Illinois.
Right, that's right.
Coran, Louisiana, Mohammed, Illinois, Mecca, California, Mecca, Indiana, Palestine, Texas, and Sultan, Washington.
Yeah, let's stop for just a second on Mahomet, Illinois. Now, in the 1800s, Mahomet was the name for the Prophet Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was a time during the Shriners, during this, you could say, silly but also serious look to the Arab and Muslim world for names and language and so forth. Now, there were post offices with that name, Mahomet Post Office. Shriners adopted that language, Mahomet. And it really is a reference to the Muslim Prophet Muhammad. It's the only village or town I know of in America named after the Islamic prophet Muhammad.
We're going to take a break and return with Jonathan Curiel. His new book is about American Arab influences in America. Oh, I see. iTunes hasn't given me the song I want here. Come on. Here we go. As we head to the break, I want to give you a little taste of this song that's from the Other Voices CD. It's not available on iTunes. You're going to have to dig it up at a record store. And it's called Ships with Sails. We'll continue on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540 would like to take this opportunity to wish you and your loved ones the very best during this holiday season. From all of us to all of you, happy holidays.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, the holiday season. Poinsettias, holiday bouquets, centerpieces, garland, the scent of pine and spruce. Beautiful. Nothing gets a body and the spirit more than getting flowers, unless it's giving them. Just ask the floral experts at Ferrari Florists and Gifts. Every year, we're as busy as elves helping people send their happiest wishes to friends, family, and colleagues. Everybody loves a gift of flowers. We sure can work some holiday magic to spruce up your home, too.
Tis the season to send flowers and warm hearts for the holidays. Call Ferrari Florist and Gifts at 831-460-7000. Visit our website at www.ferrariflorist.com or stop by our shop at 514 Front Street, Santa Cruz. Ferrari Florist and Gifts, experts in the art of expression.
Robin's Jewelry in Carmel is open every day for your holiday and gift shopping. Robin's Jewelry is one of a kind, unique, and stylish. She uses sterling silver and semi-precious stones and will customize a keepsake right there on the spot. Robin is a native Carmel artist and silversmith. She's located inside the Dowd Craft Studio at Ocean and San Carlos. Robin has a big selection of organic bling. Great jewelry that's affordable. With free engraving and gift wrapping, go to Robin's Jewelry in Carmel.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Show. What was the Arabic influence on Elvis?
Elvis.
Now, he was as American as they can be, Jonathan Curiel. How would Elvis have any Arabic influence in Memphis, Tennessee?
Well, this is a great question. You don't hear it musically, but if you were a student of Elvis Presley about his life, you would know that Elvis Presley had a lifelong literary love affair with an Arab poet, Khalil Gibran, and his famous book, The Prophet, which came out in 1923, but when Elvis was 20 and dating a 17-year-old girl named June Wanico, she handed Elvis a copy of The prophet. And at that point, Elvis Presley was very insecure, very nervous about who he was. He was a rising star, very handsome, very famous, but he was deeply insecure about his place in the musical pantheon. She handed him this book, hoping to calm him down. This book is famous for its looking at the world in contradictory ways. One of its famous quotes is, "Even as love crowns you, so shall he crucify you." And the essence of the prophet, one of the essences, is that life is hard, it's complicated, it's contradictory. And Elvis Presley, through the prophet, understood that. Till the day he died, he was a champion of this book. On the day he died, he had the prophet on his nightstand. He wanted to make a movie of this book, and he wanted to be the producer for it.
Did he take it to the White House when he had that meeting with Nixon to be a DEA agent while he was high on whatever?
No, great question. As far as I know, he did not. But you could say that the prophet was with him there, because intellectually he took this book wherever he went. Mm-hmm. He relied on this more. I mean, I've talked about how Elvis Presley really needed to be in therapy. He needed to be in therapy. He wasn't in therapy, but so he looked for other spiritual ways to kind of come to terms with the contradictions in his life. Mm-hmm. This was the biggest spiritual way, as far as I'm concerned, that he embraced, and that is Khalil Gibran's The Prophet.
And you point out in the book, I really never traced the life of Khalil Gibran. I knew about his work, and it's been exposed to me at different times, and I think of him as a nice philosopher guy. But you go in and you show how he lifted, or shall we say, was heavily influenced by many Islamic traditions and language, the Quran. And you also point out that his end was as ignominious as Elvis.
Yeah, this is one of the things that really shocked me when I was doing the research for this book. Now, Khalil Gibran was a Maronite Christian from Lebanon, and yet the prophet combines Arab Muslim culture with Christian philosophy, Christian doctrine. And scholars who know the prophet, I don't, but I refer to them, they say that this book does combine Sufi traditions, Islamic traditions, Christian traditions, all in one book. In fact, the prophet in the prophet, Al-Mustafa, is actually an Arabic name. And in fact, it's one of the names that the Muslims have for God, for Allah. And it's one of the 99 names. It means the chosen one.
Yeah.
And as you point out, both Khalil Gibran and Elvis Presley had sad deaths. I mean, they both died in their 40s. They both died bloated and physically removed from the heights of their popularity.
Yeah. Now, let's see if people recognize this. Come on, iTunes, fire. I paid 99 cents for this. I wanted to play. Here we go. I guess it's going to take a second to load. Oh, I see. I turned the volume down. Let me start this again. This is an operator error, and I'm the operator. And so let me get this back to the beginning and see if people recognize this. Here we go. Rock. This is the inimitable Dick Dale, and this is the song called Miserloo, at least one version of it. Are there many out there?
Yeah, this is the version. I have to say, I've not heard this version before.
Oh.
The version that anchors a Pulp Fiction, Quentin Tarantino's movie, is much different from this.
Oh, yeah.
But you get a sense of the other version that I think a lot of people know of.
Should I ask iTunes for a refund?
Maybe.
I picked the one that was, it said, most popular. This was the one most downloaded, this version.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, this is definitely Miserloo, but if it's a version of Miserloo. Now Miserloo is a song that I think a lot of people know, even if they don't know the name. But Miserloo is actually a name that means the Egyptian, and it's actually Turkish. Now, Dick Dale's real name is Richard Mansour. He's half Lebanese on his father's side.
Yeah.
He learned the song. He loved the song growing up in Boston. His uncle played it on the oud. And so when Dick Dale, after changing his name, you know, from Richard Mansour, was in Los Angeles and wanting to play a song that could connect with audiences, he remembered Miserloo growing up, played the song, and it begat surf music. Dick Dale is the father, the grandfather of surf music, and this song has Arab and Turkish roots.
And is this a Stratocaster? Do you know? Do you know what guitar he used?
I don't know, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm afraid.
Interesting. And you said that he kind of trusted Quentin Tarantino and then was probably a little shocked when he saw all that sex and violence in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
I was.
Amen, Peter, because I was as well. It's a very stylish movie, and Quentin Tarantino is deservedly praised for that film. And on the other hand, it may be, you know, one of the only popular movies in the last 20 years that was started because of a rock song, Nizzerloo. Now,
you describe in the book that the song came first. Tarantino built the movie around the song.
He built the movie around the song, and so here, this is one of the interesting, you call it an irony, call it whatever. Here's a song, you know, rooted in the Ottoman world, in the Arab and Muslim world, and Quentin Tarantino loves it. It's a timeless song. He goes to Dick Dale and says, I want this song. Will you please let me have it? And Dick Dale says, I will, and let's see what you can bring. And he brought a very violent movie that was stylish at the same time.
Jonathan, this has been fascinating. I want people to pick up your book, Al America. That's Al with an apostrophe. Travels through America's Arab and Islamic roots. Our guest has been Jonathan Curiel. He writes for the San Francisco Chronicle, and this is a book that I think you'll find fascinating. Here's the song I told you about off the air. It's about the Middle East from a British perspective, a band called The Dove from the mid-80s, and it's called Armageddon Days Are Here Again. We won't have time to get to the lyrics, but now you know what it is.
Red sky, moon in from the east, the water's west, we're back on my helmets over the east.
Bonjour, this is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Obama camp. What did they talk about with the governor of Illinois?
The Obama team and the Illinois governor. The report is out. I'm John Harchie.
GM closes a couple of SUV plants, cuts more than 2,000 jobs.
Well, it's kind of depressing. A lot of years in there.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Jim Taylor. Yes, Barack Obama's incoming chief of staff had a couple of conversations with Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, but an internal review today comes up with nothing wrong in those conversations about filling the Senate seat vacated by the president-elect. CBS's John Harchie.
The transition team's internal review found the president-elect had no contact with the Illinois governor about his replacement in the Senate. But Rahm Emanuel, soon to be chief of staff, did.
My inquiry determined that there was nothing at all inappropriate about those conversations.
Greg Craig, the incoming White House attorney, says Emanuel did pass on some names of candidates qualified to fill the Senate seat, but there was no discussion of any personal benefit to the governor based on whom he would appoint. John Harchie, CBS News, Washington.
The bottom line is, according to this report, which to be sure comes from within the Obama transition team, there's simply nothing of any consequence to look at.
CBS News chief political correspondent Jeff Greenfield.
This information had more or less been leaking out on a steady basis, so there was nothing in here that would raise an eyebrow. I think the question is this going to be enough to satisfy the kind of permanent low-grade fever cynicism that Americans have when they think about politicians, especially when one of them has been arrested and whose tapes reveal a somewhat less than noble approach to government.
The Illinois governor facing federal charges of trying to sell the Senate seat to the highest bidder. Now this.
Just because it's last minute doesn't mean you can't gift smarter with the perfect gift at a great price from Office Depot. Hurry in now because it's all on sale. All HD TVs, all digital cameras, all camcorders, all digital picture frames, all portable GPS systems, and more. Gift smarter with Office Depot and get the gifts they really want, like the hottest technology, all at great prices. Office Depot, taking care of business. Sale ends 12/24/08.
And now, another reason to switch to GEICO.
Every month, we get lots of letters telling us how much folks like GEICO's claim service. And I quote, "The adjuster assigned to my claim was incredible. He walked me through everything." Then there's this one. GEICO.com is very useful and lets you track your claims. And this. "I filed a claim at 4:15 on Thursday afternoon, and my car was in the shop at 10 a.m. on Friday." And my personal favorite, "Easy Squeezy Lemon Peasy."
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
The last chip is over at the General Motors plant in Janesville, Wisconsin.
I tried to stay away from the people that were crying. I didn't want any part of that. I'm getting a lot of these thinking of you text messages from all my friends because everybody knows what's going on.
The layoffs there already scheduled. 1,200 jobs eliminated, like Rodney Vandenberg's.
Our last truck rolled off the line about 7 o'clock this morning, and there was a lot of hugs and handshakes going around, meeting old friends that I've worked with in the past 20-plus years.
Wisconsin AFL-CIO President David Newby.
The Janesville plant is one of the most productive and efficient plants in the whole United States, if not the most. The problem is that they were making a product that nobody's buying anymore. Large SUVs.
Another 1,080 jobs gone with today's closing of a GM SUV plant in Moraine, Ohio, too. Sales of new homes down in November, down 8.6%.
That is about a 17-year low and continues a decline in sales that has been taking place for about 3 years.
David Crow, chief economist with the Home Builders Association, and that's not all.
Home sales were hit by a triple whammy.
Existing home sales down as well. Walter Maloney at the National Association of Realtors.
Rapid deterioration in the job market, the stock market crash, and weak consumer confidence really hit existing home sales in November.
Going down, Tom Closa, Oil Price Information Service, on the latest status of the price of oil and gas.
They were pretty weak. I mean, we've stumbled back down to about $39 a barrel for crude, and gasoline lost a few more cents, and frankly, it looks as though we're going to end 2008 like we spent the last 4.5 months, which is heading south.
Remember when the price of oil was skyrocketing? Fears it would only go higher. Sadly, many homeowners locked into long-term home-heating oil contracts again. Tom Closa.
If the customers worked with a heating oil vendor that locked in prices for the fear that prices might be $5, $6, $7 a gallon this winter, they may be paying $4.50 as part of that contract commitment.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Maybe it's just me being a coach and all, but I thought winning was supposed to be hard. So Staples is doing this gifted for free thing where 10,000 people are going to win their entire purchase. GPSs, digital cameras. You know what? You're awesome at listening to the radio. You deserve a trophy or something, too. I mean, everyone else is winning these days. 10,000 winners, everything in the cards. Where's the challenge, Staples? Go to giftedforfree.com if you absolutely must. No purchase necessary. Go to giftedforfree.com for official rules. Must be 18 or older. Ends 12/24/08. I win.
Life is made up of little moments. I don't want to miss any of them.
Jump rope with me, Grandma?
Yes, Advil. It's the answer I've found to keep pain from standing in my way. Yes. Advil. I used to take different pain relievers for joint pain, backaches, muscle pain. Now Advil is my every pain reliever, no matter where I hurt. Nothing works better. Nothing works on more pain.
Double Dutch!
Yes, Advil. My every pain reliever.
Among OTC pain relievers, use as directed.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and this is my final broadcast day of the year 2008. Tomorrow, Stephanie Hendricks will be sitting in here, and Thursday is the Peter B. Collins Holiday Music Festival with gems from my tax-deductible music archives, plus Roy Zimmerman and Dr. Elmo. Last hour we were talking about Elvis Presley and the Arabic influences on him, the prophet Khalil Gibran, and a longtime girlfriend of his. And this is the other Elvis. His real name is Declan McManus, or Declan, I'm not sure how they pronounce that. And Elvis Costello has an interesting new show on television. It's on the Sundance Channel. I think it's called Spectacle. And I've caught portions of two recent episodes. One was with former President Bill Clinton. And he talked politics and, you know, what it was like to be in the White House. But what was interesting was when Costello got Clinton going about music. And I learned some things I hadn't heard before, that Bill Clinton got more scholarships for music than for academic achievement. And he had a music room in the White House. And it wasn't the Lincoln bedroom. Pardon me. I'll be right back. Just a little throat spray to help the ailing pipes here. Anyway, I do recommend it to you. I'm going to watch another episode of this new Elvis Costello show soon. But hearing Bill Clinton talk about how on certain days he would just take a break from the Oval Office. And, okay, throw in a Monica Lewinsky joke if you want. But he'd go up to his music room and play some tunes. So I found that very interesting, and I think you ought to check it out. I'm going to take a quick break here and clear my throat, and we'll be right back. I think that's better. Sorry about that, friends. We are standing by to hook up with John Nichols, the very talented writer for The Nation magazine. We can't locate him right now, so if you want to call in and talk about whatever's on your mind, I would favor your telephone calls at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And unfortunately, I don't have any scotch here, because when I get this winter crud sinus infection that leads to kind of throat irritation, the best medicine is Scotch whiskey, at least for me, and it works for me. But I don't drink and talk on the radio. That's a long-time standard of mine that I haven't violated on this program, but probably on many others in the past. At any rate, John Nichols may be able to join us, maybe not. He's a very busy guy, and the holidays are upon us. But he is a man that I have a high regard for. He's a true progressive. And he's a realist. And I invite you to go to his page at thenation.com. He posts almost every other day. And I think that he's smart, he's well-informed, he's incisive. And he understands how Washington works. And he's not afraid to criticize Barack Obama or other Democrats when they deserve it. And the Rick Warren flap has caught his attention. He's been writing about Caroline Kennedy. And he also wrote the book about Dick Cheney called Dick, a highly unauthorized biography, subtitled The Man Who Is President. And boy, has Dick been living up to that billing in the last couple of weeks. As we've discussed, he appears to be a man who is quite confident that there is a pardon with his name on it just waiting for the right moment, and that moment may be Christmas Eve, as soon as tomorrow. That's when Poppy Bush issued his pardons in 1992. And, of course, Bill Clinton waited until the last 20 minutes of his presidency to issue pardons, including the very controversial one to Mark Rich. So I remains to be seen exactly when we will see the Bush pardons, but does anybody doubt that there will be pardons? I hope there's one for John Walker Lind. Turns out his father lives a couple of blocks from our secret studio location here in the San Francisco area. And I, for a long time, have felt that John Walker Lind was really over-convicted, over-sentenced, and he was tortured. He was the first individual who really gave us an idea of the tactics and the brutal methods that were being used on prisoners in Afghanistan. You remember they locked him up in a dumpster, a modular building, in sub-zero weather, and took away his clothes. Well, they did that treatment at Guantanamo, too, but they had to use air conditioning to get the rooms that cold. And there's another tainted conviction. I want to spend a moment talking about this, and then I'll go to the phones here. John in Brookings, you stay there. We'll get to you in just a moment. But lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B if you'd like to comment on anything in the news or just wish somebody a happy holiday or whatever Christmas or seasonal greeting you use. 888-573-8372. Yesterday, a federal grand jury convicted five men of conspiring to kill American soldiers at Fort Dix in New Jersey last year while acquitting them of attempted murder. Three brothers, Shane, Elvier, and Driton Duca, were convicted, along with Mohammed Schnur and Sirdar Tatar. The men are all Muslim immigrants who lived in South Jersey or Philadelphia. They won't be sentenced till April, but they are facing life prison sentences. Now, they didn't kill anybody, but it appears that they were planning to do something. Or at least that's what the trial revealed. But this trial, like the Lodi Mosque trial here in California 3 years ago, like the prosecution of those bozos in Miami who had some vague idea of blowing up the Sears Tower in Chicago, but they'd never been there, all these have one thing in common. The convictions are based on testimony from paid FBI informants. And these are people who are down on their luck, facing criminal charges of their own, and they get flipped by the FBI, saying, look, you infiltrate this group, we'll pay you. And then if you successfully testify and lock them up, we'll wipe out your criminal record, we'll set you up with a nice little payment. And it goes into the tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars that these informants are paid. They're often low-life people, and that's the most money they've ever seen in their whole lives. That's the war on terror, as it plays out in the American criminal justice system. And it's ugly, it's immoral, it's un-American, and it doesn't do diddly to make Americans safer or to protect us from so-called terrorism. And as we wind down this year, I hope you will just think about these five defendants in Pennsylvania who were convicted in the court in Camden, New Jersey, on flimsy, tainted evidence from well-paid FBI informants. 888-5-PETER-B, if you'd like to join us. I want to thank all the people who've responded, who are podcasting this show on a daily basis. And I also want to thank people who have responded to my request that you write to Bernie Ward. And if you want the information, it's up on the homepage at peterbcollins.com on the right-hand side there in my blog. Bernie Ward, a longtime West Coast radio talk show host of a liberal bent, is serving a six-and-a-half-year prison sentence for child pornography charges. And it's really tough on him and his family. And irrespective of what you think about his conviction, he's a man who generated a lot of goodwill when he was a talk show host and did a lot of great things, raising money for poor people and other causes. And if you're so inclined, I would encourage you to write him a letter and just share some love at this season of the year, because Bernie is at probably a low point in his life, and any kind of support that you could offer, I'm sure, would be welcome. Again, the information is on the homepage at peterbcollins.com. Here's John in Brookings, Oregon. Thanks for calling, John. And is you there? There you is.
Yes. I would like to start off by just saying that as a 35-year retired educator, I learned more on your show than I did in most of the classes that I took to get wherever the hell I thought I got.
But, well, thank you, John. That's a real compliment.
I mean,
and I'll take it.
It's just wonderful. And I do think that if you look at Aberlour, double cast, 12-year it may help your throat.
Oh, okay. I have some anesthetizing spray here, and I have a miracle drug called Tessalon Pearl that's in my system right now. It's a non-narcotic cough formula that generally works until my voice gives out.
Well, anyway, I have something that I can let Barack Obama make all the cabinet appointments and the decisions he's making early and give him some space and time. But one thing I just can't understand is it appears that we're going to have a two-stage rule of law, that high-level political elected folks get one type of law that they can violate at will and that there's no consequence, and
mm-hmm.
and the rest of us, it seems, we can get hammered for really silly infractions sometimes, what I think are silly and sometimes very justified. But I do think it's a double standard, and I think it's going to ruin our country if we at least don't have an investigation and either clear or convict the criminals that have been running the country, or the alleged criminals, let's put it that way.
I sure agree with you, John, and I'm not a vindictive person. I'm not on a vendetta. I don't care if Bush or Cheney spend a day in jail. I want full disclosure of what they did. I want us to set a standard and an example for the future that we will not tolerate this kind of power grab, the expansion of executive authority well beyond the intent of the Constitution, the passivity of the Congress in permitting this, including Democrats, after they took control of the House in 2006, and the legacy here of domestic spying and so many other illegal acts that they are now, you know, bragging about.
Yeah.
And you know, if the pardons don't come, I want a full investigation, and I would prefer that it start as a criminal investigation. Because if we have one of these truthiness commissions, it'll taint the evidence, and you'll never convict anybody. And the guy I really want to see exposed and held accountable is a guy named David Addington.
Yeah.
He's Cheney's number two. He took Scooter Libby's place. And he is an arrogant, and you know, arrogance is not a crime, but he's committed crimes with arrogance, and we really need to stamp that out. So I'm with you, John, and I will not stop talking about that, and I will continue to bring outspoken people on this program, and we'll do what we can to pressure the incoming administration to bring accountability, full disclosure, and justice to those who abused power in the Bush era. Happy holidays, John, and thanks for calling the program.
Thank you.
We'll take a break and return. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and I've got lines open. Join me now at 888-5-PETER-B.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale with The Sheila Show, Saturdays 3 to 5 p.m. For the next few weeks, college basketball will be airing during my show, so please, if you tune in and hear basketball, listen in on Sundays from 3 to 5, The Sheila Show, where we talk about everything and help you get through life's toughest challenges with some humor. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Princess Monterey Whale Watching on Old Fisherman's Wharf in Monterey. Remember, if you hear basketball during my show on Saturday, tune in Sundays 3 to 5 for The Sheila Show. See ya.
The holidays can be a time of hope and connection, and can bring opportunities to spend more time with friends and family.
For some, this can be the most difficult time of the year. This year, think of the true spirit of the holidays and consider giving the gift of a renewed connection with someone you care about. I'm Mark LeCluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in Soquel under the supervision of Santa Claus and Dr. Chaim Barton. I can work with you and your loved ones to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection this holiday season. I still have a few spaces left and would love to help. Please call one of our elves for an appointment. 831-818-4033. That's area code 831-818-4033.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
KRXA 540 AM is the home of Cal State University Monterey Bay Basketball. Hi, this is Rob Ponce, the voice of the CSUMB Otters, inviting you to join KRXA as we bring you the best of NCAA Division II basketball with the CSUMB Otters.
The CSUMB Otters will return in the new year, January 2nd at 7 p.m. for a 7:30 tip with Sonoma State right here on KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, now live in Boston on AM 1510. New England, give us a call. Toll free, it's 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Jason Leopold joins us in about 10 minutes from the Public Record, and we'll talk about some of the stories he's working on. For John in Brookings, thank you again for your comments, but I want to direct you to the Center for Constitutional Rights. During the break, I pulled up an email that just came in, and one of the things they're working on is accountability for Bush crimes, and the CCR has, I'm reading the email here, has always called for prosecutions and accountability, and it seems the tide is starting to shift in our direction, they say. They have a new white paper about justice for the Bush administration, and if you go to the website ccrjustice.org/100days, you will get that information. It's ccrjustice.org, 100 days. Now, also during the break, I got an email from our friend Phil Butler, who served in the Navy and spent more time in the Hanoi Hilton and got more torture than John McCain did. He has been an outspoken opponent of torture policy, and pardon me, he has responded to an invitation from Senator John Kerry to write a letter about his experiences so that Kerry can use it in a future Senate debate. And I thank Phil Butler for that. He is a real stalwart on these issues. Here's Jimmy listening on KRXA from Monterey. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I spent 8.5 years in the Federal Bureau of Prisons, and last year and a half I got to know John Lynn pretty well.
You did?
Yeah. And
well, tell us about him.
Well, he went over to Yemen to study Arabic when he was 18 years old, right after high school. And he fell under the Wahhabi school of Islam, and which to me, Wahhabism to Islam is like this Rick Warner is to Christianity.
Okay.
And he went to he got kind of caught up and went to Kashmir to help the Pakistanis, you know, that stand off there on the glacier.
Right.
And he got disillusioned, and then he went to Afghanistan to help the Taliban up in the right northeast corner where they were still had a standoff with the Northern Alliance.
Right.
And that was the summer of 2001. At that time, the Taliban, they had representatives in Houston negotiating for a pipeline. Bush had just given them $35 million for eradicating the poppies.
And, right.
Hamid Karzai was an Afghan consultant on that deal.
Exactly.
Right.
And they weren't our enemies. And that's where, you know, they weren't on any kind of terrorist list or anything. And
we had just sent the Taliban government $43 million, I believe, or maybe it was $143, as a reward for their eradication of poppy crops in Afghanistan.
Exactly. Yeah, Bush had just done that. Now, the first John knew about 9/11, he was working as serving as a sentry up there. And he knew nothing about it until they started getting bombed by U.S. Planes. And he tried to get to Pakistan to get home. And he'd been shot in the leg on the way to Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
They paid this one warlord to pass through his territory. They were going to turn over all their little Toyota trucks when they got to the border.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy double-crossed him and took him prisoner, his little group. And by this time, his wound was infected.
Yeah.
He's down the dungeon of that fort, and he was basically dying. The Northern Alliance were rolling hand grenades down the ventilating shafts and pulling people up and executing
Jimmy,
him.
Jimmy,
and then
Jimmy,
over.
Jimmy, I want to give you more time to tell this story, but I have a break that I can't delay. So if you'll stay with us, I'll bring you back right after the break and talk with you a little more, because I'm very interested. And I know Bush is going to issue a bunch of pardons. One of them, in my view, must go to John Walker Lind. That simple, in my view. 888-5-PETER-B if you'd like to join us. Jason Leopold on the other side of this break, too. We'll continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Nick Tanum on duty taking your calls today.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
When wishes come true. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. I know that 2008 will go down as a pretty bad year, but as you look back, you can make the argument that as bad as the numbers were, this was also a year when wishes came true. I heard today, for example, that gasoline may be headed back toward $1 a gallon. $1 a gallon. Just last summer, if you dared even to wish for such a thing, the cops would have tasered you. Now even OPEC has to cut spending. Even Alaskans might have to give up some of their free money. And we didn't have to fill the Midwest with windmills to do it. A wish come true. It took a recession to make it happen. But even then, how many times have we heard psychologists tell us we work too hard? There's too much stress. Slow down. Get 8 hours of sleep. Well, at least 3 million more people get to sleep in now. Although it's not necessarily helping the stress. And the materialism that we're always being scolded for, that's gone. People are saving their money again. Banks have stopped their irresponsible lending. And as a result, desperate merchants have marked everything down to Walmart levels. Another wish come true. And the polluted, car-centric society that social engineers are always lamenting? Heck, now whole car companies may just disappear. And to top it all, one look at the weather map shows you that huge numbers of Americans are enjoying a white Christmas. They're enjoying it on the floors of bus stations and airports. But always remember, when you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are. Be careful what you're wishing for, because sometimes it's a meteor. Now this.
You've got spam in your email now.
Whoa. The holiday season is here, and with it, the onslaught of email-based spam, viruses, spoofing, phishing, and spyware attacks. Keep your business safe this holiday season by installing a Barracuda Spam Firewall, the world's number one selling anti-spam solution. With no software to install and no per-user fees, it's the simplest, most cost-effective way to stop dreaded holiday spam. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now for your free trial, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go to Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Quite continental.
Let me tell you about Chavez Jewelry Designs in Watsonville. Have you ever noticed how significant beautiful jewelry can be? A lovely diamond ring, special necklace, sparkling earrings, or a watch can be truly meaningful. When purchasing or repairing precious memories, having a friend in the jewelry business is critical. Chavez Jewelry Designs is your friend in the jewelry business. With Chavez Jewelry Designs, you will find the best products and repair service at the lowest prices. Stop by and check out Chavez Jewelry Designs. Conveniently located at 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville's Crestview Shopping Center. Chavez Jewelry Designs is open weekdays 10 to 7. Call Chavez Jewelry Designs at 768-8004. That's 768-8004. A friend is waiting.
Looking for a big city dining experience with local ma-and-pa prices and service? Look no further than Jim's American Chinese Restaurant at 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road, Prunedale, just behind Burger King. Stephen Lowe, master chef and co-owner of Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, brings to Prunedale his 35 years of experience in cosmopolitan San Francisco. Stephen serves traditional American and Chinese dishes with subtle, delicious French and Italian influences. Jim's has great meals for $10 to $15. For extraordinary food to die for and prices that won't dent your budget, make it a point to visit Jim's American Chinese Restaurant in Prunedale. Jim's is open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 9, and Sundays, noon to 9. At Jim's, you can dine in or take out. And catering is also available. Call 663-4888. That's 663-4888. To make reservations at Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, call 663-4888.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Pardon me, Mr. Still President, but if Cheney gets a pardon and Rove gets a pardon and Libby gets a pardon and Addington gets a pardon... You got to pardon John Walker Lynn. That is the opinion of your humble host. Jason Leopold will join us in just a moment from the independent and nonprofit investigative journalism site, The Public Record. But I want to continue to hear Jimmy's story. As Jimmy told us, he spent the last year and a half or so in a federal prison where John Walker Lind is serving a 20-plus year sentence. And, Jimmy, you were describing what happened and how he was really an innocent player here, where he had been wounded already. He was at this site in Afghanistan, a fort area, and Johnny, who was the CIA agent who...
Spears.
Say again?
Spears, I think his name was.
Yeah, and was it Johnny?
Sure.
I felt like the first name was Johnny.
Jimmy.
No, you're Jimmy, but I think he was Johnny. at any rate, you know, there was a firefight there. And they made it seem like John Walker Lind was an active combatant when, at least according to his account, he was wounded and sequestered deep inside this fort when the fight there took place. Is that the way he tells it to you?
Yeah, he was basically down in this dungeon, and there was about 2 feet of water. There were a lot of dead bodies floating around. He was dying at the time. And they were bringing, once they took control of the fort over again, the Northern Alliance, they were bringing up people out of that dungeon and shooting them execution style, 2-3 at a time. And then when his turn was coming up, that's when he finally spoke out in English, and that's what spared him from being executed. But he never took up arms against the United States. He's not anti-American. He, he's, you know, just Ashcroft just blew it to high heaven, you know, his involvement. But he never fired his weapon. He got 10 years for material support to a terrorist organization, which is his work of the century, and then he got 10 years consecutive for use of an automatic weapon, which was his AK-47 they'd given him. So he's doing 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't anti-American at all. I mean, he's just a young kid that...
And tell me how you found him. Is he scarred? Is he psychologically damaged from the way he was tortured and abused?
He was working as an orderly in the library and education department. He's the most common thing you say to him is, what did you say? He's the most soft-spoken person I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
He's about 6'3", weighs about 160 pounds. He's like a scarecrow. And he studies Arabic all day long,
mm-hmm.
what he does.
Yeah.
Kind of a hermit or monastic kind of a thing. The only problems he had there in prison was because he's Muslim, and most of the Muslims in prison are black. He was hanging out with the blacks and eating on their side of the chow hall and everything. He got in a fight once over that, but he acquitted himself quite well. I saw that,
mm-hmm.
and pretty much everybody leaves him alone.
Yeah, and what institution is he at?
Well, I don't know where he is now. I left in 2003.
Okay.
That was federal SDI Victorville.
Oh, Victorville, California.
California. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And also about Bernie Ward, I've been communicating with him, too.
Oh, good.
If people want to go to the Bureau of Prisons inmate locator, type that in, and they'll tell you, you got to type in his full name, Bernard, not Bernie, and they'll tell you what you can send and the address. And mm-hmm. I've been sending him books and magazine subscriptions and stuff like that.
Well, Jimmy, I'm really glad to hear that because a lot of people have shunned Bernie. I understand that they're disappointed and some people feel misled. But I decline to judge him. And I know the good work that Bernie did on the radio and off the radio. And I got to know him.
Quick about Bernie.
I got to know him a little bit personally. I don't consider him a close friend. But if I were in that position, I would want people to give me the benefit of the doubt and offer forgiveness.
Yeah.
And I encourage people to do that, even if you're angry or you feel, you know, duped by the way that whole process evolved. He was trying to defend himself in a very difficult situation with draconian laws. And so on my website at peterbcollins.com, on the right-hand side. Yeah, I just want to finish.
Okay.
I want people to access the address there.
Yeah.
And as Jimmy just pointed out, Bernie can use stamps. He can use cash. His family is in a very difficult position. So if there's anything you feel you would like to do to help, at the BOP.gov website, that's where you can enter his personal information, and you can actually make a deposit to an account that he has access to. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, you can't send stamps.
Oh, you can't?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you why I'm helping Bernie out. I'm not judging him on his crime of conviction or anything, but I was down there in Victorville for 4 years, and we used to lock down at 10 o'clock. And I would go to bed, and we could get KTOs down there at night. And there must have been 1,000 nights where I fell asleep with him in my headphones.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a real inspiration and a dose of intellectual ism, and I really appreciated him for those 3.5 years. So
all right.
Just paying him back.
Well, Jimmy, I'm glad you're out. I want you to stay that way. And I thank you for calling with these important anecdotes on the program today. And if you are in touch with John Lind, please let him know that he has a lot of people pulling for him. And I'm hoping, but you can't count on Bush. That compassionate conservative
Bush
thing was BS.
Let him out.
Well,
it also takes 6 weeks for a letter to get back and forth because it has to go through the CIA.
Yeah. All right, Jimmy. Thank you, and happy holidays to you.
It got me on a no-fly list of writing to him.
It did?
All right. Yeah.
Writing to Lynn's did?
Yeah. I got it taken care of, but First time I tried to fly, I was on the list.
This is America.
Yep.
All right, Jimmy, thank you. Thanks. Happy holidays to you. Now, that's a very interesting call, and I appreciate that. Jason Leopold joins us now. He is the lead reporter and co-founder of the brand-new website, The Public Record, at pubrecord.org on the web. Jason, how are you today?
Good, Peter. How are you? I think we have our connection got a little messed up, I believe.
Okay, what you having trouble hearing
me? Can you hear
me? I can hear you. We've been having a little feedback on the system here, so I've been tweaking a little bit. Is that better? Hello, Jason? I don't think it's better. Nick, we're going to have to call him back. I think we lost that connection there, so we will get Jason on the line here in just a moment. And we'll talk about some of the breaking news that he's been working on at the Public Record. Pubrecord.org is their website. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be taking your phone calls in the Free Speech Zone. And then later next hour, we're going to be talking with Diane Farsetta. They have put together the Falsies Awards at the Center for Media and Democracy. And we'll share that information with you about an hour from now. Jason, is that any better?
It was better for a moment, but now it's not better. I don't know what's going on.
Well, it's me. It's not you. How's that? Is that louder?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. So it's not your problem. Did he hang up again? Nick, call him back. And we'll leave him on Bank One here because I know that's working. And we'll have to do a little tweaking after the show here to get all this balanced out. I do apologize for the little technical difficulties here, but it does happen when you're doing live radio. You just have to be prepared for that. And I think we got Jason back here in just a second. We'll get to him on a different input, and I think he'll be able to hear us then. So go ahead and put him up here, Nick. We're ready. Okay, Jason, I have you on a different input now. Can you hear me?
Oh, so much better, Peter.
Okay.
You're there. It's really you.
All right, I apologize. I had to tweak it the other day. We had about six calls on the air at one time.
Ah, okay.
And one of them was a cell phone, and cell phones have a different feedback loop.
Yeah.
And so it creates problems for our system. Anyway, happy holidays to you. How are you holding up?
Doing well. You know, trying to stay busy despite the holidays. Readers are dropping off, enjoying the extended holiday, but Dick Cheney is not letting up. So I'm trying to stay busy.
Well, Jason, one of the things that I'm anticipating, the reason that fellow Jimmy called and told us about John Walker Lind, is that I started talking about the expectation that pardons may come on Christmas Eve. That's when Poppy Bush did it.
Right.
And the other choice would be on the final day in office 20 minutes before it's over, which is how Bill Clinton did it. So somewhere between now and then, I do expect a spate of pardons. You can't stop them. It's an absolute power that the president holds, and I expect Bush to use it and abuse it quite widely.
Yeah.
And if he's going to do that, his conscience, I think, should permit him to also pardon John Walker Lind.
Yeah. Well, you know, he did issue some pardons today.
Oh, he did. I didn't know that.
He did, actually. There were no big names popped out. I mean, I'll tell you that the first person that I checked to see if he pardoned was Scooter Libby, Vice President Cheney's former chief of staff, and who was convicted in the Valerie Plame leak. But he pardoned about 19 people, I believe, today.
Just warming up, huh?
I'm sorry?
Just warming up.
Exactly, just warming up, and commuted the sentence of one person. I would say that probably the most, the one that stuck out the most today was somebody who was convicted in a real estate scandal. And this person's father had donated, $25,000 to the Republican. So,
that's a tidy package.
But the Justice Department did say that he still has the ability to pardon additional people, and that he's still looking over applications. We should expect that there's a possibility that more additional individuals will be pardoned.
Mm-hmm. And so, it certainly, I mean, this is obviously armchair speculation, but the bluntness and detail of Cheney's comments in response to direct questions about torture policy, about waterboarding, about eavesdropping on Americans illegally, he has brazenly asserted that it was all legal. And the way he is describing and discussing it just clearly indicates to me that he either has no fear of any prosecution in the Obama administration,
right,
and I don't know what signals might have been dropped or passed about that, or he's the man who has the confidence of a pardon with his name on it, and so, hey, what have I got to lose?
Exactly. I think that if people took the time to just read the transcript, or even look at the segments from the television interviews, I mean, what Cheney has described in detail is just truly unbelievable. I mean, he is unapologetic, and basically comes off as if he's saying to the Obama administration, incoming Obama administration, I dare you. I dare you to come after me. The fact that he said yesterday, and this is, by the way, not getting any play whatsoever, but this is the first time that we have, anyone from the Bush administration providing as much detail as Cheney provided yesterday during an interview he gave with the Washington Times, the conservative Washington Times.
The Mooney paper.
Exactly. Now, I should say that the interview, the transcript was released yesterday, but he said that he personally signed off on the waterboarding of three detainees, and that he signed off on the so-called enhanced interrogation of 33 prisoners at Guantanamo. Now, one of those detainees was, his name was Abu Zubaydah. That was the first, he was the first person captured in the so-called war on terror that underwent waterboarding. It turns out, however, that he is not the high-level detainee that everyone claims he is, mm-hmm. everyone in the Bush administration. But the fact that Cheney said that, you know, that he signed off on it and that it was the right thing to do, it's just truly, you know, remarkable that, you know, we don't have any further calls for a war crimes investigation. And I do think that he is saying, you know, I don't think that anyone's going to go after. I think he believes that no one is going to go after him. And in fact, that's why he's so forthcoming with details. I mean, if you think about it, these are classified top secret programs. And it's been quite difficult to get any information from the Bush administration about, you know, what took place. Nobody has ever confirmed or denied that, you know, that waterboarding was, you know, was ordered.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Cheney, during the last, you know, 30 days of Bush's presidency, is out there, you know, offering up quite a bit of detail, I think signals that, you know, he feels very confident that he will, you know, skate.
Well, and we're hearing these signals from Obama and things attributed to Eric Holder, the designee
right.
for Attorney General, that they're not interested in a partisan witch hunt. Well, I'm not either. You know, embracing the Constitution and holding people accountable. We had conservative Republican Bruce Fein on the program yesterday.
Yeah.
And he very clearly stated, he said, this is not some sort of a vendetta or a witch hunt. This is simply enforcing the law. And that's what the president and the attorney general swear to do.
Exactly. And, you know, Joe Biden, Vice President, elect Joe Biden, he would not, you know, say one way or another what the Obama administration would do. This was over the weekend during, I think it was on ABC This Week with George Stephanopoulos, which he was interviewed and said that, you know, the new administration just wants to move forward. They don't want to look at the past. But let me just give some people a little bit of background here. You know, Cheney
And let me do that after a break. I'm sorry, Jason.
Okay, you got it.
We've got to take one, and
you
we'll return
it.
In just a moment. Jason Leopold with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And if you'd like to join us, 888-5-PETER-B. We'll have a free speech zone coming up about 15 minutes away where you can comment on any issue that's on your mind or just shout out a holiday greeting. We'll continue in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Just because gas prices are low doesn't mean our troubles are over. Mother Nature's getting hot under the collar, our economy is in the toilet, and we're spending billions overseas to fill our tanks. Both kinds. Did you know local people have sold locally made fuel on the Central Coast since 2002? At the Green Station, our biodiesel is ASTM approved and is made from restaurant fryer oil collected right here. Did you know that electric cars were first built in the 1830s? Almost 200 years later, and our government still has plenty of money for oil wars, but not enough to jumpstart our renewable energy economy. 70% of all car trips in America can be done in a neighborhood electric vehicle. This will help save our planet and save you money. Zen neighborhood electric cars are at the Green Station now, and they can be charged by the sun. From local biodiesel to electric cars, bikes, and scooters, renewable transportation and a more peaceful world are just a call away. Call the Green Station today in Santa Cruz at 831-425-9100. Major credit cards are now accepted. That's 831-425-9100. 831-425-9100. Again, that's 831-425-9100.
Peninsula Gem and Jewelry in Monterey is like no other store on the peninsula. 30 years family owned and operated, Peninsula Gem specializes in finished jewelry, jewelry repair, and custom design. Supplying tools and materials for the jeweler and lapidarist from precious metals to cutting materials. Check out the spectacular Monterey Jade and other collectible minerals. Great gift ideas too. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry is at 2245 North Fremont Street, right next to Big Five in Monterey. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry.
Hi, I'm Audrey Williams.
And I'm Melvin Williams.
Check out our new show, Holy Hip Hop on the Block, every Saturday from 10 to 12 noon, right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Check us out.
We go, starting another war.
Pardon me, mister.
Got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. Hey, we're Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? We lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news.
We're talking with Jason Leopold from The Public Record. That's the new nonprofit journalism site where his investigative reporting is featured. PubRecord.org on the web. Not too late to make a tax-deductible contribution here at the end of the year to keep that work going. I know it's crucial because everybody's getting crunched by the Bush economic worldwide meltdown. And so if you can help, I really would appreciate it. Jason, I had to interrupt you as you were about to tell us a little bit more about Dick Cheney's criminal admissions.
Well, part of the interviews that he's the statements that he has been making in these interviews has been that, you know, the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel provided the opinions which authorized the Bush administration to push aside the Geneva Conventions, torture treaties, and allow these enhanced interrogations. But what Cheney didn't mention, and I don't even think that Cheney's aware of it or even cares, is that the Justice Department's internal watchdog has actually, for the past 4 years now, been investigating John Yoo, who is the former deputy in that office, who was largely responsible for writing this so-called torture memo, as well as his boss, John Yoo's boss, Jay Bybee, who signed it. And basically, this investigation, and I spent quite a bit of time reporting on it. This investigation is looking into whether or not the legal advice that they gave was sound and proper, or if they abused their authority in giving the White House this this legal advice by relying on an obscure health benefit statute. In addition to that, the meeting that took place where enhanced interrogation and waterboarding was discussed was prior to the drafting of this legal memo. That was in July 2002. It was a so-called principals meeting where Cheney, his attorney David Addington, Condoleezza Rice was there. She led these meetings. So it's one of those chicken versus egg scenarios. This was not something that the Justice Department just came up with. This was something that the administration wanted to do, and I'm talking about the enhanced interrogation, which is tantamount to torture. They wanted to do it, and they asked the Justice Department to Office of Legal Counsel to provide the letter, a legal memorandum, saying they could do that. And as Carl Levin, said, the chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee, you can't just, make this up. You can't just go out and say that something that, has been illegal for decades is suddenly legal. And that's exactly what they did, and that is what they're under investigation for. So there will be a report that comes out in the future, that determines whether or not you know, John Yoo and Jay Bybee and others, you know, acted in bad faith. You know, what happens after that, you know, that's really going to be up to the Obama administration. But to let this go would truly send such a terrible, terrible message. I mean, this is like I wasn't old enough to recall what, you know, what people were feeling after Nixon resigned. But
well, I am.
You know, from what I understand, when Gerald Ford pardoned him and said we have to move on, there were people who were, you know, pretty angry about it.
Oh, it was outrageous. And it's people like Bill Kristol and Dick Cheney who now talk about what a great decision that was.
Yeah.
But it was unnecessary. And, you know, I just saw it as a very political move that I think was the deal that Ford had with Nixon.
Right.
Nixon said, I'll resign. You can become president. All you got to do is pardon me. What do you say?
Right. Exactly.
And they wrapped it up in this postpartisan Healing America BS.
Yeah. Yeah. And if, you know, if the Obama administration simply says, look, you know, let's just stay in denial. Let's forget this ever happened and move forward. I mean, that's the wrong message. And you know, just I'll repeat something that Dennis Kucinich told me during an interview, you know, months ago, is that, you know, this sets a terrible precedent for, you know, future administration.
Yeah, so. It sure does. Well, Jason, I hope you and your new baby and your lovely wife have a great holiday. And
thank you, Peter.
I thank you for all of your contributions to this program and on the web and your reporting all year long. And I'm looking forward to a very productive year with you in 2009. We got plenty to talk about.
One.
Yep. Jason
Thanks,
Leopold,
Peter. Take care.
PubRecord.org. Free Speech Zone's coming up next. Grab a line, 888-5 Peter B. Do it. Oh, and now this. Where is it?
Are you tired of paying $100 an hour for computer support just for the prompt to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call, and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer, and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618. 888-629-9618.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. The Obama Transition Team declares the Obama Transition Team absolutely clean in its dealings with Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich and the alleged selling of the president-elect's vacant Senate seat. CBS's Ben Tracy.
The 3.5-page report says Obama himself had no contact with the governor, but incoming White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel did have one or two phone calls with Blagojevich. In one call, he pushed close Obama advisor Valerie Jarrett for the Senate seat before he knew she had decided instead to work for Obama in the White House. Emanuel later relayed to the governor's chief of staff, John Harris, over the course of four or five calls, the names of six people that Obama thought should be considered for the Senate seat.
CBS News Chief Director of Political Coverage, Steve Shigaris.
Blagojevich had said, the quote was, they're going to give us nothing but appreciation, bleep them. How did he get to that conclusion? We don't know that, and this report does not answer that question, because this report says we never were involved in any conversations with Blagojevich that involved any deal-making.
Doesn't matter whether it's new or existing, home sales are down again. Real estate analyst Mike Larson.
We had another grim month of data in November. Both new and existing home sales fell on the month. We still see for sale inventory readings in terms of supply at or near all-time highs.
Are you kidding about the price of gas?
You can find gasoline in parts of the country for as low as $1.25 a gallon, and the average is probably about $1.65.
Tom Closa, Oil Price Information Service. Oil prices tumbling below $38 a barrel today, so the price of gas is headed even lower. He's losing his job at GM, but...
I'm not mad at GM. I can't be mad at GM. Because... they fed me for 23 years.
Joe Valdez, one of the 1,200 workers losing jobs at the GM plant in Janesville, Wisconsin today.
It's the way this country's gone that let us go. It's the way this country has went. I mean, how can... It's not dumb. It's not GM to just let us go.
The plant there manufactured SUVs, which people are not buying these days, which is why the GM plant in Moraine, Ohio also shut down today, nearly 1,100 workers losing their jobs there. Somebody's thinking about new ways to get you to part with your money.
Retailers want to jolt consumers into spending money. They propose allowing shoppers to buy tax-free during 3 10-day periods, tax holidays, in the new year.
We hope that the states would suspend their sales taxes and the federal government would reimburse them for sales taxes lost.
At the National Retail Federation, Rochelle Bernstein says something is needed to help consumers, to help the economy.
We think it's really difficult to foresee an improvement in overall economic growth without aid to the consumer.
John Hartshee, CBS News, Washington.
The founder of an investment fund that lost $1.5 billion dollars worth, Bernard Madoff, committed suicide at a Manhattan office today. His wrist slash, Rene de la Villache, found with a box cutter and a bottle of sleeping pills. This is CBS News.
Honey, come on. We've got last-minute shopping to do.
Let's go to
Lowe's Last-Minute Extravaganza!
A bullhorn?
Sorry. But this Thursday through Christmas Eve, we'll get 10% off major appliances, $397 or more.
Oh.
Plus, we can register for a free $10 online certificate with purchase of $100 in Lowe's gift cards and get 10% off all wet dry vacs and Kobalt tool storage chests.
Let's go to Lowe's.
I'll start the car!
Do your last-minute shopping at Lowe's this weekend to get 50% off holiday decorations. Lowe's. Let's build something together. While supplies last, some restrictions apply. See store for details.
Experience the joy of designing your own ring at Jarrett, the Galleria of Jewelry.
That's Jarrett!
Let the experts at Jarrett show you how easy it is to create an engagement ring that reflects your own personal style. Choose from their popular settings in platinum or hundreds of settings in gold. Then select the perfect diamond from thousands at Jarrett in a wide variety of shapes and sizes to create a ring that's yours and yours alone.
It can only be Jarrett!
Find a Jarrett store or shop anytime at Jarrett.com.
Vitamin D and cesarean section. Barry Bagnato on the CBS Health Watch.
Many people don't get enough vitamin D, pregnant women in particular. Now a study finds that may be one factor behind the growing number of cesarean deliveries.
The risk can be as high as 4 times greater.
Boston University researchers say in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. Dr. Jennifer Leedon Wu, an obstetrician at New York's Lenox Hill Hospital, says D helps strengthen muscles needed to push baby out.
It is a good idea to supplement with vitamin D-enriched foods and also vitamins.
Doctors often order C-sections long before a woman reaches the delivery room, but for those insisting on natural childbirth, this study suggests vitamin D can help. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
More than 170 people back on solid ground after spending hours trapped hundreds of feet in the air in Singapore. They were stranded by a technical problem aboard the world's largest Ferris wheel, 541 feet. Rescuers had to lower some people to the ground by rope. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Just because it's last minute doesn't mean you can't gift smarter with the perfect gift at a great price from Office Depot. Hurry in now because it's all on sale. All HD TVs, all digital cameras, all camcorders, all digital picture frames, all portable GPS systems, and more. Gift smarter with Office Depot and get the gifts they really want, like the hottest technology, all at great prices. Office Depot, taking care of business. Sale ends 12/24/08.
And now, another reason to switch to Geico.
Every month we get lots of letters telling us how much folks like Geico's claim service. And I quote, "The adjuster assigned to my claim was incredible. He walked me through everything." Then there's this one. Geico.com is very useful and lets you track your claims. And this. "I filed a claim at 4:15 on Thursday afternoon and my car was in the shop at 10 a.m. on Friday." And my personal favorite, "Easy squeezy lemon peasy."
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
The holidays are here. Are you ready? Well, they're going to happen whether you're ready or not. I still got a little scrambling to do to get things buttoned up, but I'm not panicking yet. This is my last show of the year, tomorrow. Stephanie Hendricks will be here. She'll be sitting in a couple of days next week, too. We've got our Peter B. Collins Holiday Music Festival coming your way on Christmas Day. And that includes an hour of music from my tax-deductible archives, plus recent live performances by Roy Zimmerman and Dr. Elmo. So if you want to catch one of those or hear it again, be sure to gather around the radio with your friends on Christmas Day. On Friday, which is what they call in the British world Boxing Day, when you box up the gifts you don't want and send them back, we'll be rebroadcasting our special theme show about the future of media, the future of journalism. And we'll replay that on New Year's Day as well, if you'd like to hear parts of it you missed or the whole dang thing. Right now, my lines are open for you. It's a free speed zone. Give me a call. Toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. I'd be tickled if somebody calls from Boston, and we still have a gift for you from Boston if you call in and get on the air on the program today. It's a DVD of the documentary Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, the Clint Curtis story. And the plot has thickened with the airplane crash last Friday that killed Mike Connell, the Bush computer guru who knew a lot. And perhaps knew too much. And Steve from Salinas, if you want to call back, if you're still listening, I would love to talk with you about the point you wanted to make last hour. And that is that this is not the first Republican election-related guy to die or to die under murky circumstances. Not the first to die in a plane crash. And so it's something that bears investigation. Larissa Alexandrovna at Raw Story is on it. Mark Crispin Miller from New York University did a great interview with Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! On Monday to bring attention to the case. And according to the most recent email from Professor Miller, there's still pretty much a corporate media blackout on this issue. And curiously, Karl Rove has not offered any public sympathy or condolences to Heather Connell, who survives Mike, I believe, with four children. So it's a powerful story. We've done our best to cover it here. But our show only goes so far, and we know that. And so we need to keep the pressure on to make sure the corporate media does report on these issues and on the powerful deposition that Mike Connell delivered the day before this November's elections. That some people speculate caused Karl Rove to say, okay, we're not going to steal this one. It's too risky, and the spread is too great. And as we know, shortly after Mike Connell gave his deposition in Ohio, Karl Rove went on the Fox Channel and predicted that Obama would win. After having said 4 weeks before that, that John McCain was going to win in a squeaker on election night. So there's a lot of circumstantial evidence, and I want to be really clear. It's circumstantial, but it's powerful circumstantial evidence about Karl Rove, about his ties to Mike Connell, about the way on election night 2004, they sent home the computer expert in Ken Blackwell's office, the Ohio Secretary of State, said, we got this handled. And shortly after that guy went home, the vote count was switched to a server in Knoxville, Tennessee, controlled by Mike Connell. And that's where the vote tallies started to diverge from the exit poll results. And when Richard Hayes Phillips did his forensic investigation and published the book Witness to a Crime earlier this year, he showed the remarkable ways the ballots were altered. It appears that some punch card ballots, I think 60% of Ohio voted on the punch cards in 04, many of them were pre-punched for Bush. So that if somebody voted for Kerry, well, that's a spoiled ballot. And if they don't vote for president at all, well, the choice was made for them ahead of time. And you know the issues about the access to the polls denied to many likely Democratic voters in Ohio in 2004. And it all adds up to a stolen election, in my opinion. And a major witness died in a plane crash. Weather was clear. There's no indication of a malfunction of the aircraft. And he was a very experienced pilot. Not going to speculate any further, but we will continue to monitor that story and keep you abreast of what we learn. 888-5 Peter B., if you'd like to call in. And yesterday, I acknowledged that we have a very healthy audience of podcasters, people who live outside of the range of our radio stations and who download the show from their computers every day. And I'm just tickled by this because I'm starting to get information. Here's Paul in Durham, California. Peter, I'm one of the downloaders. I also download Tom Hartman every day, which is where I first heard you. I listen to your show because you talk about issues the mainstream media should be talking about and don't. Plus, I'm forced to download you and Tom because I live near Chico and we can't receive your signal over the air. Really sad to hear Bernie got such a tough sentence. I used to listen to him wherever I could. Whenever I could, I will try to write him soon. Signed, Paul. Thank you, Paul. And Paul also is one of our supporters. Listeners support the Peter B. Collins Show. And you, well, you saved my butt this year. We were in danger of shutting down the show after the election in November because of the bleak financial situation and my own personal pinch. And over 100 people came to our support and helped us through that very difficult time. I thank you for that. We're still limping along a little bit. We've got the new station in Boston, and that's a real big expansion for us. We're pleased by that. But financially, things haven't improved that much. And so I do invite you to visit my website. And if you're in a position to help, just click on the link. You can help. And we have a free gift, a copy of a great new novel called The Najik Pheromone, that can be yours for a modest expression of support. So again, my website, peterbcollins.com, and right there on You Can Help is the tab where you can get the information. And my mailing address for people who don't have access to the web is simple. P.O. Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. That's Box 100, Mill Valley, 94942. Ed in Aptos, happy holidays. Ed, how you doing?
Pretty good. I lied. I want to talk about two subjects.
Okay.
Actually, it's in response to what you just said that about the plane. I forget his name.
Mike Connell.
I heard that he was an experienced pilot, and he actually aborted two flights prior to the one, his fatal flight, because he found something wrong with the airplane. And
right.
Usually, when you go to, I'm a pilot, and I know when you go out to airplanes, you really usually generally don't. Find things wrong with airplanes. To find, you know, two flights in a row, find something that's qualified for grounding the airplane, that's highly suspicious.
I wish we knew the nature of those things that he discovered that caused him to scrub two flights. Your information is correct. We just don't have the details on why he did that.
Yeah, you know, that's probably one way that that these spooks can rub people out without, you know, without it surfacing very much.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered, actually I called because of Bernie. I tried to look at how to give him some money, and
uh-huh.
It's not very apparent on that website that this is Bureau of Prisons,
right, BOP.gov. I haven't been there myself.
A little search box there. If you put money in it and then put search, the way it'll pop out, but if you try to just search the site with, you know, on your own, look at the they have a laundry list on the left of things you can open up.
Uh-huh.
But donations is not there. You have to put money into the search window and search on that.
Okay.
And do you have any idea of, is there a limit on how much you can give, or what's the
I'm not aware of any limits there, Ed. Honestly, I'm intending to donate some money myself, but I haven't done it yet.
And it seems like the best way to do it is to send him a postal money order.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess you have to go down to the post office and send him that.
Yeah. Well, and Jimmy, who was on the air with us last hour, who did a stretch in federal prison with John Walker Lind, he told us that you can't send in stamps. And in my blog post, I encouraged people to do that. So I guess if you do, they'll just...
Hopefully, if you send money, he can purchase stamps. There,
right.
I would hope.
So. Yeah.
Well, that might be a question.
Now, well, and let me just add that in prison, both federal and state prisons, one of the ugliest things that they do is they jack up the rates for telephone calls, and you can only call collect. You could call the prison in Beaumont and they will never connect you with Bernie, but he can make calls out. He can only make collect calls though. And they charge like over $2 a minute. And you know that long distance rates have gone down to a nickel. And so that spread is being grabbed by, in this case, the feds, but it's done in the California Department of Corrections too. And it's just such ugly exploitation of the people who can least afford it.
And secondly, is his change in prison, when did that occur, and is there anything we can do to accelerate his return back to the West Coast?
No, I don't think so. What he told me in a letter was he didn't give an exact date, but it appears that in September sometime, he reported in late August, so it wasn't very soon after he was, processed into the system at the federal institution near Pleasanton. He said that without warning, he was put on a bus. They didn't really tell him where he was going. He was taken to the airport. They flew him to Oklahoma City. And then by bus again, they took him like a 12-hour ride from there to Beaumont, Texas. And he had been told that in the deal that he made, the plea deal, that he would be incarcerated in California within 500 miles of San Francisco.
Well, it seemed like there's some way we can protest the...
He said that he cannot appeal for relocation for 18 months. So that's what I understand from
well,
what...
Well, I didn't know whether if people from the outside could raise a little hell, and I would think that maybe... wasn't he in a... worked for Boxer at one time?
He did, yeah. He worked as...
Maybe she could help him out a little bit. I would think maybe it's... You know, that just seems, you know, on the face of it, I see no reason for it to move them all that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're in a cell, I don't think it makes any difference where the cell is, except for the people that want to come and and visit you.
All right, Ed, thank you very much.
Okay.
Merry Christmas.
Have a good Christmas, and catch you next year.
All right, same to you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
And Jimmy called back. He said at the BOP website, Bureau of Prisons, you go to the inmate locator, type in Bernard V. Ward. That's his given name, Bernard V. as in Victor Ward. And then there's a place to send funds. You can only send postal money orders. There's no limit on how much, but only postal money orders and books and magazines. Those appear to be the rules. We'll take a break and return. Your calls are welcome here at 888-5-PETER-B, the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Come here, Max. What's wrong?
Ruff.
What?
Ruff.
Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Ruff, ruff. Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow.
Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Meow, meow.
Want to meet a healthcare provider that will give you the time to talk about your health issues and actually listen to you? Are you looking for an alternative to the pill-popping culture created by the megaceutical companies? Do you have chronic pain, headaches, depression, allergies, or any other unresolved health concerns? Give Optimal Health a try. Hi, I'm Glenn Sadowski, licensed acupuncturist at Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey at 655-3208. I'll be at the Pilgrim's Way Bookstore in downtown Carmel on the second and fourth Sundays of each month. Reserve your space for an absolutely free 20-minute health evaluation, a wonderful opportunity to make an informed decision on your well-being. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture at 655-3208 today. Times are limited. Optimal Health, where you receive good medicine with great results. Our number again is 655-3208 or on the web at optimalhealthmonterey.com. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 24 minutes after the hour. You can call me. Lines open at 888-5. Peter B., I just learned that we're preempted by a basketball game in Boston. So, Eureka, Monterey, step up to the plate. Tell me what's on your mind. You know the number. During the break, I jumped over to bradblog.com, and if you take a look there, they have a 10-minute video. It is raw footage, and let's see if there's any audio with it. Okay, these are the people with the camera, and they are going to the crash site near the Akron-Canton Airport last Friday night when Mike Connell's plane hit a flagpole and then crashed into a house. He died, and as we know, he had been deposed for information that he may have had regarding the election anomalies that I consider a heist in Ohio that denied John Kerry the presidency in 2004. And one of the things that's really interesting in this raw footage is that one of the theories is that the plane crashed, pardon me, because Connell had been delayed on the runway outside Washington, and may have used up too much fuel. Well, one of his co-workers, who had flown with him many times, said that he was a guy who was dialed into his plane, and he knew how to trim the use of fuel from four different tanks to balance the aircraft. You know, as you use fuel from one wing, then it causes the plane to tilt a little bit. And so the theory that he ran out of fuel doesn't match the raw footage that I'm looking at right now of the fireball caused by the plane crash. Now, there are potential explanations on the ground. He may have hit a propane tank. I do not have enough information about exactly what the crash site looks like to know if there was any other fuel or any kind of an accelerant that he might have crashed into. But it was a residential area. There are two homes described that were impacted by the crash. A flagpole apparently also was hit as he came close to the ground. But I'm seeing a sustained fireball here that it was first seen about 30 seconds into the video, and I've got 2 minutes worth now, and it's a huge fire that's lighting up the sky and is visible for quite a distance around. So that does appear to limit the potential that this plane crash was caused by running out of fuel. Now, I hope there will be a full investigation, but one of the issues, as Mark Crispin Miller has pointed out, and if you go to markcrispinmiller.com, you can get on his email list, and he is quite prolific. I get 10 to 15 emails a day from Mark Crispin Miller, but he's all over this story, and there's a lot of interesting information. So if you're curious, and if you are so inclined, you've got bradblog.com, you have rawstory.com, and markcrispinmiller.com. Those are all places where you can get detailed and pretty in-depth information, and also the challenge to the corporate media to investigate this story and really get to the bottom of it. There is one TV reporter in Cleveland who's shown some cojones so far, but largely this story has been ignored by the corporate media. We'll take a break here and return with Diane Farsetta. She's from the Center for Media and Democracy. And they have issued their falsies awards for the past year. We'll talk about that next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Go ahead. Take a deep breath. Yep, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
We all know the economy's experiencing some rough times, but some people seem to thrive, even in tougher times than this. Want to own their secrets for yourself? Now you can dissolve away your own barriers and blocks to prosperity and success in life despite negative circumstances. Attend a very special transformational two-day event in beautiful Asilomar. The Monterey Center, your one stop for mind, body, spirit wellness, proudly presents How to Prosper and Flourish with international personal transformation and success leader Ronaldo R. Robles, coming to the Monterey Peninsula in Asilomar for 2 days only on Saturday, January 31st and February 1st, 2009. Seating is limited. Call now to 831-641-9812 to reserve your ticket to success at Inspiring Asilomar Conference Grounds today. Call 831-641-9812. That number again, 641-9812.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at La Sala's Byright Market in Delhi. Whatever your choice, we at La Sala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. La Sala's Byright Market in Delhi is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. La Sala's Byright Market in Delhi, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Cornerstone Wellness Center in Monterey specializes in reducing stress and pain in your body. With six professionals, Cornerstone offers hormone balancing for men and women, all natural, no side effects. With our bodies filled with toxins and aches and pains, this approach works. I'm Sheila Gale, and I've lived with chronic neck pain for years. Trina Hammack uses a technique called quantum biofeedback, which to me is a miracle. I feel better and better each day, physically and mentally. Cornerstone offers lymphatic drainage, infrared saunas, ionic foot baths, massage, estheticians, and body strengthening specifically for your body so you'll start living pain-free naturally. Tired of taking medicine? Homeopathy and top-of-the-line essential oils are used. Finally, an alternative that works. Cornerstone Wellness Center, 1088 Cass Street, Monterey. Call today, 373-6204, 373-6204, or go to cornerstonewellnesscenter.com.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from the dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B.
Oh, yeah.
And add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, partial of progressive politics and electric guitars. Go ahead, crank it up. It's Brian Setzer and his orchestra. We're just about to close the book, turn the page, and take a look in the rearview mirror at the mess created by the Bush administration. I call them the wrecking crew, and they've still got a few more weeks to do their damage. You know they're working on it. And we have Karen Hughes recalled from Texas for White House duty, along with Karl Rove, to try to spin things even further, to rewrite history and make Bush and Cheney out as the great Americans they think they are. But the truth often catches up, because there are people who pay attention and keep track. Diane Farsett is one of those folks. She's at the Center for Media and Democracy in that hotbed of liberalism, Madison, Wisconsin. Hello, Diane. How are you?
I'm doing well. Peter, how are you?
Holiday greetings to you.
Yeah, same to you.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about the Falsy Awards that have been issued by the Center for Media and Democracy.
With much fanfare.
And I have some drum rolls for you, so whenever you need a drum roll,
okay,
you just call for it, okay?
All right.
You're a radio person yourself. You host the weekly spin, the weekly radio spin. And is that, we don't worry about competition and all that stuff. Is it on in any stations or cities in California, Oregon, Washington, or Massachusetts?
Oh, you know, offhand, I am not sure.
Oh.
I'm sure it is in some of those areas, but offhand, I do not have the list.
Okay. Well, people can go to your website at prwatch.org and find out more information about the show.
Right.
So tell us about the origin of the Falsies Awards. How long has your group been issuing these?
Yes, well, they are a very prestigious award, as you can guess from the title. And this is the fifth year that we've been shining a light on the polluters of our information environment with the Falsies. And basically, it's our, you know, it's the time of the year where there tends to be retrospectives of what went on in various areas. And you know, a while back we thought, well, we should do something like that, because there's certainly more than enough topics that we cover in a month, let alone a whole year, and they're worthwhile revisiting. So we thought we would do it with a little bit of fun and tongue-in-cheek, and that's how the falsies were born.
And is there a panel of judges? How do you arrive at these determinations?
Mm-hmm. Well, we start off with a number of nominees that we just, at the Center for Media and Democracy, come up with. But then we throw it open to the public, and we have a survey on our website, and we ask people to vote on our nominees and also to submit their own. So we have the golden bronze or golden, silver, and bronze falsies, and then reader's choice and win against spin. So there's lots of ways that if you are a media deceiver, there's lots of ways to win.
Well, and there's been so much spin, so much misinformation, so much disinformation, that it must have been particularly challenging here as we hopefully come to the end of this Bush era of lies, secrecy, and just outright fabrication of information. I mean, the most recent thing that still sticks with me is Dick Cheney making all of these claims about how he's kept America safe through torture and spying on American citizens, and it was all legal, and anybody who questions that just doesn't understand the constitutional oath that he and Bush took. Well, I understand it better than he does.
Right.
Because the oath he took was to protect and defend the Constitution from enemies, domestic and foreign. And when he recited it, he left out the Constitution part, because that gets in the way, doesn't it?
Right, yes. All sorts of ways that you can basically present a reality that you are comfortable with, no matter what your past is, no matter how much blood, quite honestly, you have on your hands.
Yeah. So would you like to start with the gold or work our way up? I'm going to let you make the call, Diane.
Let's work our way up.
Okay. So let me
build the suspense.
Let me scroll down here. And let's see, we'll start with the Reader's Choice, because there were some good efforts here.
Yep.
Go ahead and describe a few of them for us.
Sure. And this is always fun to see what people write in with. But as might be expected, in an election year, we had a lot of political and presidential campaign-related nominees. John McCain, for the whole gambit of him supposedly suspending his campaign to deal with the economic crisis, along with lots of smears, of course, against Barack Obama. Obama was nominated several times for not being the change that he promised, basically, during the campaign, and people saying that because of his cabinet picks so far. And Joe the Plumber, who can forget Joe the Plumber?
I can. I'm still waiting for somebody to really connect the dots, because Joe's last name is Wurzelbacher, and Charlie Keating has a daughter who's married to a Wurzelbacher. And pardon me, for McCain to have selected him as this middle American icon with indirect links to the Keating scandal was rich.
Yeah, and actually the links to the Keating, I believe those have been looked into it and shown that there wasn't the links to the Keating scandal, but there was sure...
No, to the family, not the scandal itself, but to the Keating family.
Mm-hmm. But there was surely just the spin of presenting him as, just a middle American who was supposedly unaffiliated at first, is how he was being presented, and just, a salt-of-the-earth kind of person who's concerned about his finances in hard economic times, as we all are, that quickly fell by the wayside as it was shown that, actually he was a Republican and very much a partisan that was scoring points, and that wound up being a very convenient person at that point for the McCain campaign to use as a symbol.
Well, and he kind of went rogue, too, because they thought they could package him to serve their ends. And he was really hard to diaper.
Right.
And then he published a book. We won't say that he wrote it, because I can't imagine that he actually did. But a book is published with his name as the author. And I haven't read it. I'm waiting for it to be reduced to $1.98, and then I might. But the news accounts say that he dishes on McCain and said that he was on the Straight Talk Express and he wanted to puke.
Well, I mean, that's not surprising, actually. I mean, politics is, and especially the McCain campaign this year. And I should say that one of the actual winners of our Reader's Choice policy was, of course, Veep Choice Sarah Palin. And there were lots of good reasons that people nominated her for one of the people wrote in saying, actually, she should get the award for faking being a viable candidate, along with the whole palling around with terrorists smear job against Obama and just generally, you know, really being an unabashed, even for a country that had seen 8 years of Bush, she was really quite shocking for her amount of spin.
Well, you can't blink, Charlie. And, you know, the liberal media will take whatever you say and just twist it, so it's better if you don't say anything.
That's right. You betcha.
And she's, you know, the bubble that they put around her was bizarre. And the corporate media pretty much accepted it. You know, they would occasionally say, come on, call a news conference. Come on, sit down with a real hard-hitting reporter. But for the most part, they were content to accept the photo ops, replay the Bill Ayers attacks, and just really be stenographers instead of journalists.
Right, and it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, I have no doubt that she has aspirations for another national run, and we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah. All right, you also have Hank Paulson and Ben Bernanke nominated by readers for their handling of the financial debacle and for its spinning and lobbying around the bank bailouts and now the auto industry bailouts. And it is bizarre. I mean, just in the last 24 hours, Elizabeth Warren, who is, I think, the one and only member of the TARP Oversight Board, has been saying, you know, what the hell's going on here? None of this makes sense. And then on the news hour on PBS last night, there was a gentleman from the General Accountability Office who said that they can't even find receipts for the money that has been pushed out, $350 billion.
Right.
And this is just amazing.
Yeah, and the documents that the Treasury Department has released on how they're supposedly handling this are so heavily redacted. You know, and they say, well, this is to protect the banks that otherwise would be, you know, if we gave to the public the information that they're giving to us, that they would be compromised even further. But, you know, if we bail them out, I think that we deserve a little bit more information than we're getting, and certainly a lot more responsibility and accountability amount of money.
Pardon me, Diana. It's been interesting to see Bloomberg and the Associated Press be the hard hitters here, using freedom of information requests and other tactics to try to figure out where the bailout money has gone and what it's being used for. And AP developed the information that these very banks that have accepted bailouts have paid out huge bonuses to their executives. And so it's going to be very interesting to see if there's a new level of accountability and if they put basic bookkeeping techniques into play before they hand out any more money from Washington.
Right. You would think that the amount of responsibility that we all practice in our personal finances might apply to Wall Street as they're getting bailed out through hundreds of billions of dollars.
I mean, I use Quicken, and I'd be happy to just bootleg a copy for them. It's very easy to use, and I've never seen it make an accounting error.
You know, one interesting thing that I think this whole episode really illustrated quite dramatically was when that first bailout, that first bid basically for untrammeled power by the Treasury Secretary Paulson, when that was rejected by Congress, it was a really interesting convergence of just the administration pushing hard on something, not feeling like they could go to Bush to be the front person because he's so unpopular. These things unfolding over the weekend, they didn't have access to their usual spin people like they often do. So it really sort of fell apart. There wasn't that slick messaging around it that there often is, or that, you know, pretty much any other time that there is a major policy push, that there is this very slick campaign around. And I think, you know, just the fact that it was called the bailout from the beginning was something that really was really illuminating, or really said a lot about what happens when actual truth can come into the conversation, as opposed to being dominated by the spinmeisters.
We're talking with Diane Farsetta from the Center for Media and Democracy. And I'm just going to gloss over the China one. People can read it on the website. But you ding China for using Hill & Knowlton, the virulent PR firm from Washington, to help try to scrub their image during the Olympics. I want to focus on Rick Berman because this guy really deserves attention. He's worked for Philip Morris, and he runs these phony, AstroTurf groups that sound like legitimate organizations like the Center for Media and Democracy. He likes the term center. He had the Center for Consumer Freedom and the Center for Union Facts, and these are simply fronts for propaganda that is coming from corporate interests.
Yeah, Rick Berman, we really wanted to honor him. This is our first ever lifetime achievement falsy, and we think he really earned it. As you pointed out, Berman is a longtime industry flack, basically. He's a lobbyist by trade. He's a lawyer. He used to be an anti-labor lawyer, and he still does a lot of anti-labor, quote-unquote activism for pay. But basically what he's he has a Washington, D.C. lobbying firm. He has major alcohol, tobacco companies, other sort of big industry group, big restaurant chains that try and keep down a minimum wage. These are his clients. So not only does he represent them as a lobbyist, but he also has this sort of side business of setting up front groups. And, yeah, they have great names. Who could be against consumer freedom? The Center for Consumer Freedom. But basically what they do is lobby against public health legislation. They keep the minimum wage down or try to keep the minimum wage down and do all sorts of anti-consumer ad campaigns, anti-consumer lobbying. And actually the Center for Consumer Freedom, which is one of many of Rick Berman's front groups, probably the most familiar because it's been around the longest, actually got its start back in the 90s as a front group for Philip Morris. And at that point, Rick Berman was trying to help Philip Morris against these horribly, determined public health advocates that were trying to limit smoking in public areas. So that's how he got his start making these front groups, and he just won't stop.
And we should give him lifetime membership in, I can't remember the exact name of the group, but in the movie Thank You for Smoking, the tobacco lobbyist, the booze lobbyist, and gun lobbyist got together, and it was kind of a death club. I can't remember the moniker they used. But Berman deserves a seat at that table. Yes. Diane, we'll take a break and return and get to the bronze, silver, and gold falsy awards for the most offensive PR, I guess that's the way to put it, in the past year. We'll continue with Diane from the Center for Media and Democracy in just a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show. Remember, smiling faces don't always tell the truth.
Smiling faces sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within. Smiling faces.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
They don't tell the truth. Smiling faces.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Cruz. Come listen to the new Jennifer Cruz Show, Saturdays at noon, where we will get into it, I-N-T-U-I-T. We'll talk about intuition, emotions, and passions, all the invisible aspects of each and every one of us that nobody talks about. The Jennifer Cruz Show is made possible by Weiland Galleries in Carmel and Water Me Well Inner Healing Apparel. Visit watermewell.com. See you Saturdays at noon on the new Jennifer Cruz Show. Remember, Saturdays at noon, only on AM 540. Get into it.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top item today, Media Matters has chosen Fox News' Sean Hannity for the winner of the 2008 Misinformer of the Year Award. Here's a quick look back at 2008.
Obama's far-left domestic policies, yes. Income redistribution, his Global Poverty Act.
His support of abortion, even
abortion.
Late.
After a child was born.
Obama in Chicago. The state Senate wanted the child killed.
It's all about the black community. It's a black separatist agenda. Now,
Wall Street keeps sinking. Could it be the Obama recession, the fear that taxes are going to go up, forcing people to pull out of the market?
Upon hearing the news of his award, Hannity responded in kind.
our first annual left-wing Obama Mania Media Propaganda Sleaze Award. And this year, the winner goes to the group Media Matters.
That award rolls right off the tongue. For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Wide open Robinson for a three off the inbound. Two for two, Nikon Robinson. Four on three up the left side. Jamal Boykin, the open floor. Goes in and Viney and scores.
This is the voice of the Golden Bears, Roxy Bernstein, inviting you to join us for another exciting season of Cal basketball right here on your home for the Bears.
Oh boy, Dartmouth visits the Haas Pavilion this Saturday, the 27th, for an early game at 12:30 in the afternoon right here on KRXA.
So I'm in the holding cell, and I'm in there with everybody from people in there for indecent exposure, drunkenness, to people in there for murder. I'm in this room wearing a white silk jacket, a skinny black tie, and makeup. I could have had a sign on my back that said, fresh meat. The 6.5 foot tall skinhead walks up to me, and he takes my arrest form out of my hand. He goes, what? Armed robbery? You? You can just hear the murmurs of admiration in the cell. And I'm thinking, this is starting to work, man. I can feel a change happening. And he's reading and he goes, seven counts? Seven counts of armed robbery? You? And I said, who keeps count?
Richard Stockton with a minute from planetcruise.org.
That's a Spinmeister talking. Useless to resist us. We've got the corporate media megaphone. We put it out there. They pass it along without criticism or actual reporting. And poof, you got propaganda working for you. At least that's how I see it. Diane Farsettis from the Center for Media and Democracy in Madison. They have awarded their annual falsies for, I guess, the best spin.
Best or worst, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, right. It is a two-sided coin. So I have a drum roll for you here, Diane. Let me get the drummer in place here because we're about to reveal the bronze award for falsies. They get a free Victoria's Secret and lifetime supply of Wonder Bras. And this goes to the fine folks who bring us clean coal. When I go home tonight, I'm going to load up the fireplace with some clean coal and just warm my fingers over it.
When you burn clean coal, actually, you get nothing but rainbows and puppies, I think.
And you know what was beautiful? I was in Denver for the Democratic Convention, and the Clean Coal Express was there.
Oh, yeah.
And Clean Coal had sponsored the CNN broadcasts of Democratic debates during the primaries. So this clean coal propaganda is all over the place, and every person I talk to, whether it's about the way coal is extracted with mountaintop mining techniques or the way it is burned with the very loose self-regulation permitted by the Bush administration, there ain't anything clean about coal.
No, not at all. This is basically a desperate PR gambit for them because they realize that they're on the losing side of history at this point, that burning coal is a major contribution to greenhouse gas emissions, and obviously this is something we need to get serious about very soon in terms of, you know, basically avoiding the worst that might happen from global warming. So you have 82 coal plants, planned coal plants across the United States that have been canceled or put on hold just over the past year and a half. These are, you know, basically almost all of the new coal plants in the last 2 years that were planned did not happen. And it's because of exactly what you said, everything throughout the whole life cycle of coal-powered electricity is detrimental to human health and to the environment. So how did the coal industry respond? Basically ramping up its PR and marketing, going out and using front groups, again, with wonderful-sounding names like Americans for Balanced Energy Choices.
Yeah, can you be against balanced energy? What about the way Chevron is now spending billions, or at least millions of dollars, to promote the idea that when they drill sensitively?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a little Novocaine before the bit goes into the ground.
Right. I mean, yeah, it's the dirtier the industry is, the more amazing their spin is when you take a deep breath and just look at what they're actually saying.
And there's some pushback coming. I was surprised by a commercial in the middle of I was watching the cable shout shows the other night, and this guy comes on, and it was bizarre. But at the end of it was the clear message that clean coal, mm-hmm. it ain't. And so I think there's some novel techniques being used to try to counter that spin.
Right.
All right, let's move up now to the Silver Falsy Award. And this goes related to counting the fatalities from our war and occupation in Iraq. And this is one of the sorriest aspects of the Pentagon program to keep the American people from finding out the true carnage that we have caused.
Right, it is, and this is a continuing, basically spin job and smear job against independent, intelligent, principled, human health researchers, public health researchers that are among the few people who are really doing their darndest to figure out, you know, what has the human impact been, in Iraq of our invasion and occupation. You know, I'm sure listeners remember back in 2004 and 2006, there were studies that came out in the medical journal The Lancet,
yep.
that estimated what were the quote-unquote excess deaths. And what do they mean by that is deaths that would not have happened otherwise if the United States had not gone into Iraq.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's these very extensive surveys going from household to household in communities across the country. It's comparing that information to what were the health indicators before the U.S. invasion in 2003.
And then, Diane, the cynical use of partial information to try to show that the surge has worked, claiming that Iraqi deaths have declined, and we can't believe those any more than we can believe the denials of the past. We're tight for time, so let's go to the gold winner, which is the Pentagon for the Rent-A-General program.
That's right, and this is something that's still continuing. There's still jaw-dropping information coming out. While we had our falsy survey open, the New York Times actually did this great follow-up. So it's the New York Times that exposed this program in April of this year. And
it was also your co-founder, John Stauber, who courageously was the only one to go on network television on the PBS NewsHour and talk about the propaganda, talk about the way the generals were selected, fed talking points by Rumsfeld and his underlings, and that this is flatly illegal based on the Pentagon budgets and the language in there over the last 30 years or so. And the real shame is that the corporate media, which was complicit with Rumsfeld and the Pentagon in doing this, has never reported its own involvement in any detail. Diane, we're out of time, but it's been fun talking with you, and thanks for the work you do at the Center for Media and Democracy.
Thanks for having me on.
PRWatch.org, and look for the falsies, the Falsy Awards. I'm Peter B. Collins. That's it for me for this year. Stephanie Hendricks in tomorrow, the best of Pat Morrow, more Stephanie Hendricks, and then I'll be back in the new year. Take care.
Bonjour, this is Véronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy 2 bottles, you get 1 bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. The Obama transition team clears itself. Details of today's internal report from CBS's John Hartshee.
The report supports President-elect Obama's statement that he had no contact with the governor or his staff on the subject of a successor to his Senate seat. Greg Craig, who prepared the report, told reporters in a conference call,
"There was only one person associated with the transition that had any such contact with the governor or his staff, and those contacts were totally appropriate and acceptable."
Craig is referring to Rahm Emanuel, who is to be the White House chief of staff. Emanuel did have one or two phone calls with the governor and four with the governor's chief of staff, but not involving any benefit to the governor based on who got the Senate seat. John Hartsey, CBS News, Washington.
Again, this is an internal report prepared by the Obama team. CBS News Director of Political Coverage, Steve Shigaris.
This is a long investigation. Anything can happen. We don't have a full indictment yet from Fitzgerald. But I think the way things look at this point, it does not look like that the Obama folks are going to really be dragged into this Blagojevich situation.
Rod Blagojevich, the governor of Illinois, accused of trying to sell Barack Obama's vacated Senate seat. Patrick Fitzgerald is the U.S. prosecutor. Price of oil, below $38 a barrel. What's up? We asked Tom Closa, Oil Price Information Service.
If you lined up 10 reasons for this, 1 through 8 would probably have to do with the economy. Consumption's down, and there's no longer this wonderful sort of expectation that growth is going to be consistent, not just in the U.S., but abroad and in emerging economies as well.
They are very carefully counting the votes in the Minnesota senator race still.
Losing candidate will be very disappointed, but will feel that there was accurate, transparent, honest process that resulted in the conclusion that they did not get as many votes of Minnesotans on November 4th.
Secretary of State Mark Ritchie, their latest count has Al Franken leading Norm Coleman by fewer than 50 votes, the winner to be officially announced sometime after January 7th. As thousands of more American troops are preparing to head to Afghanistan next year, the job they're being sent to do seems more treacherous than ever. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick is there.
One U.S. commander is warning it could be a long, tough fight in Afghanistan, particularly here in the south, where Canadian and British troops have engaged in fierce battles with insurgent groups. The U.S. Marines are already making plans to expand their numbers here. Their top commander is touring the region.